comedian and filmmaker Dimitri Martin. From the Illinois Film Office, Christine Dudley. And live music from Chicago singer-songwriter Jennifer Hall. Now, here's your host, a man who thought the Paris Accord was a foreign hatchback, Justin Kaufman.
What do you have in the color red for the Paris Accord? What's the mileage on that? Can I get a four-door? Shiny wheels? Leather seats? Anything? I wonder if Honda's like, yes, they're using the word Accord in the news. This is great for sales. Unless they don't make that car anymore. Do they not make that car anymore? I feel like the last time I checked to see what kind of cars were being made was maybe 15 years ago. Like when, ooh, what's going on with the Civic? Civic's still around, right? Sure it is. Or someone will quickly tell me if the Accord's not. It's a download here on 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Good to be here on a Thursday. Beautiful, beautiful day on Michigan Avenue. People walking up and down. You could tell that the shortened week just got shorter thanks to the weather. Thursday night is booming. We got a great show lined up tonight. I'm very excited to say that Dimitri Martin is on the show. Great stand-up comedian and also now a filmmaker. His film Dean opens up this weekend, June 2nd. Looking forward to talking with him about his career, about making the transition to film, and about life as a stand-up comedian. That's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour tonight. Also, later, Usman Ali will be here. Great actor who has roots here in Chicago. Usman Ali can be seen on Veep. He's one of Selena Meyer's love interests. As the season goes on, there are several, but it's awesome. We'll talk with him about his time in Chicago, what he learned about being on stage here in Chicago and what he takes to Hollywood with him. Because he's in Veep, he's in Nobodies, he's in a series of unfortunate events on Netflix. Also talk to him about diversity, because he is an advocate for making sure that there's more diversity in Hollywood. He has a great background. I think he was born in Swaziland, but he lived in Botswana, he lived in Kenya, he lived in, I want to say Pakistan. I have to look it up, but he is an amalgamation of all. So when he's talking about diversity, he means it. He's got a lot going in that background. So we'll talk with him coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also tonight, Christine Dudley is going to stop by from the Illinois Film Office. We'll talk about what we can expect from the summer of filming, where we can't park. As always, that seems to be the Chicago way of sort of understanding the film production schedule. Ah, I can't park here? Get this trailer off my block.
Or where to make sure to tell the news that it's not a real accident that's happening. Right. Some people sometimes get duped. Right. There's a bad accident on Roosevelt Road. Oh, it's Chicago PD filming.
You know you're a great set designer when you can trick a Jindra. A Sarah Jindra up in the chopper. I want to say copter, chopper, right? Either one works, but chopper is probably better. Yeah, I remember one time Chicago Fire was shooting a scene in a condo building that was near my house, and it was up on the top floor, and they kind of faked the fire coming out of there and the whole bit. I watched it. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I'm probably never going to buy a condo in that building. All those wires.
When I was in New Orleans, they were filming one of the CBS, the Bacula, CSI New Orleans or whatever, and one of these bars where they were filming at. But the bar had a fire, it was destroyed by fire. And what they did to this build, I was like, that is a lot of work to make that thing look destroyed, and then they're gonna make it okay again in a day.
Yeah,
incredible.
It's amazing to me. There's so much production, film production, in the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. But in the city of Chicago, there's nothing that annoys a Chicagoan more than a film production that's in your favorite bar or your favorite play. I remember not too long ago, I went to a Sox game and I was coming back downtown with some friends and they were going to hit the Metra. And we wanted to go to downtown and we picked one of the bars and I forgot which one it was. And they were filming Road to Perdition. Remember that? Or maybe not. No, not Road to Perdition. Either that or the John Dillinger movie that Johnny Depp was in. Was Johnny Depp in that movie? Or was it a Dillinger movie that was done here? Anyway, they had shut down an entire block, and the bar that was open was in the middle, but they wouldn't let us go. And it was like, we like swore that we'd never watch that movie. It's like, you're not going to let us go to Elephant and Castle? Well, you know, who's the director on this film? No, tell me who the director is. I need to know for future consumer choices. How dare you tape old-timey on Adams when I'm trying to get a pint. Christine Dudley will be my guest tonight. And we'll also play Never Have I Ever tonight. That's 10 o'clock. We talk about what we haven't done for pizza. We'll give away pizza. I've been really digging this segment. We've been a lot of fun with people calling in and texting. We'll do that in at 10 o'clock. I mean, it's so easy. The idea, like for me, never have I ever gone golfing. I say that every week. Never have I ever gone scuba diving. Never have I ever seen Citizen Kane. And there's a couple. I was thinking over the weekend some others. I'll save them for the 10 o'clock. But 312-981-7200. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman. Let's do the carryout, shall we? Here are today's top stories. President Trump is withdrawing from the Paris Accord on climate change and promptly will re-enter the Accord on climate change. So essentially, this president, like I've been saying all along, is in the pocket of big oil. Oh, wait. Big oil is for this? Oh. Well, then he's in the pocket of small oil. Oh, they're for it, too? Okay. What about olive oil? Do they? They don't care about climate change. The president is essentially saying that he ran on the idea of getting out of this potentially job-killing climate change deal because it was bad for American workers, which he loves, by the way. Then it was said that the president, or said by the president and others, that this was for the forgotten Americans, which is code for people who work in factories that pollute. Sorry to say, but the idea that the government is putting these people out of work is hogwash. Most of the time, it's the companies themselves moving to automation or the customers moving to cheaper energy options. So, pandering much? So, if we try to save the planet, we're just killing jobs, which is ironic because if the planet dies, those coal mines, they're probably going to close up shop too. But if there's a really good reason to leave the Accord, and I'm sure there is, saying make America great again over and over and over again, it's not making the case. And frankly, and we talked about this last night, this Accord is non-binding. The emission standards and goals that are set by individual countries, that's not by this treaty. So Trump could just change what Obama set out in the goals for the United States. He doesn't have to withdraw. That's why this doesn't pass the smell test. This may be all about reminding people that he ran for president and he keeps his promises and he's going to remember that. He's going to do it again. So remember, I'm going to run again. Anyone looking? Good. Let's re-enter the Paris Accord. That's ridiculous. That being said, President Trump is touting better job numbers in the private sector and better stock market numbers, which, let's be clear, doesn't mean anything for the forgotten Americans. But new information says the economy is on the way up, until the next piece of information says it's not. That's just the way media works. On Capitol Hill, senators are calling for more information on a story that Attorney General Jeff Sessions met with the Russian ambassador, at an event in April 2016. Why is this important? Because it could possibly be the third meeting that Sessions had after he told the Senate that he never met with him at all. I mean, just that one time. Then there was a second time, too. I wouldn't count this, but there was a third time. But I read the story on NBC earlier today, and it said that the Department of Justice vehemently denies this meeting, and that investigators are just looking into it. But then I saw CNN this afternoon with the scrawl, "Breaking news, Sessions perjury!" And I think it was all caps as well. I mean, I get it. Sessions has denied under oath before, and then he's changed his tune, but not sure that this story needs the all-cap scrawl. Going to go ahead and grab the remote and go ahead and change the channel. Ooh, Matlock. In local politics, I knew Mayor Emanuel had a background in ballet, but I had no idea that J.B. Pritzker could also dance. Tap dance, pirouette, whatever else you call his reaction to the release of the Blagojevich tapes. His reaction to the press questions made Sean Spicer look like a pro. What are you talking about with this Valerie Jarrett nonsense? Did you understand that Governor Blagojevich was going for a quid pro quo when talking to you about appointing you to open seats? It's a pretty clear question. Anyway, he'd be my first pick if we were playing dodgeball. But we're not. Let's get some business news in. Here's the new business idea. Walmart is testing out a delivery service, but instead of hiring drivers, they would just have employees drop off orders on their way home from work. That is not made up. Yep, you work your 8 hours, and then on the way home, you drop off toilet paper nearby. This would be a paid gig, so it's not that Walmart could be taking advantage of current workers. But still, this was really someone's idea? Like, it just really feels like they're letting the greeters in at the big table, right? I've got an idea. I mean, I live right by McCollum Lake. I could just drop it off on the way home. I think Sam's got an idea. I can't figure out yet, but I have a feeling someone's going to get screwed over on this gig. In weather, date appropriate. June 1st weather. In sports, the Cubs and Sox with the day off. They both lost yesterday. Both of these teams are really killing the baseball vibe this year in Chicago. The White Sox look to be climbing back in. Then, boom, they lose two in a row. In baseball, two in a row is nothing. But if you're hanging on by a thread like the Sox are already, every game counts. Ugh, that's gross that every game counts this early in June. The Cubs, well, they've lost six in a row, but the beauty of this team, or the ugliness of the NL Central, is that they have a great three-game set coming up with the Cardinals at Wrigley starting tomorrow. They win the series, they're right back in the hunt for first place. To give you an idea, if you were two games under 500 in, say, the NL West, you'd be 7.5 back. So the Cubs can erase the whole West Coast debacle with a good weekend series. Tonight, the NBA Finals. Finally getting underway. Wow, it took forever. It's a rematch of the Cavs and the Warriors. The Warriors added superstar Kevin Durant ever since last year's loss to Cavs. I think they just added some depth to LeBron's receding hairline. But it's one of the best rivalries in sports, and they're back at it. I'm excited for this. Just when we're about to start it up, some knucklehead graffitis the N-word on LeBron's front gate out in California. LeBron responded by talking about race relations and bringing up Emmett Till during media day yesterday. Then Emmett Till was trending as a bunch of young people were like, Emmett Till, who's he play for? But give respect to LeBron that he has to deal with not only guarding Kevin Durant, but then also racism this NBA Finals. Real strong. Way to go. Here's a fact for you. It was 20 years ago today that Michael Jordan and the Bulls beat the Utah Jazz game one of the 1997 Finals. There are so many championships in that era that we're over-celebrating each individual one. How is this not the number one story in Chicago sports today? Remember when we beat the Jazz? Oh, which time? Mignon. Last night, the Penguins beat the Predators to take a 2-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Finals. Now the series goes back to Nashville, where hopefully the Predators can rebound. Otherwise, really? You get all the way to the finals and turn back into a fledgling wildcard team that we all know you to be? Finish the job, Predators. I can't believe I'm saying that. Finish the job. God, I hate the Predators. Finally tonight, Chance the Rapper was on The View today. He talked about racism, Donald Trump, Chicago violence, and he also said that LeBron James was the best basketball player ever. These kids. I mean, 2 points. One, I'm not sure if Chance ever got to see Michael Jordan play in person. And two, and more importantly, Joy Behar still on The View. Learn something new every day. So what? Who cares? All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Christine Dudley. She is with the Illinois Film Office. We'll talk about the productions that's happening in the Chicago area, the state of Illinois, this summer. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Here we go, buddy. Game one of the NBA final tonight. I know you're a big basketball fan. Any predictions?
I say it's a sweep, Golden State.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know, man.
That is bold.
They have so many. I mean, it's great. It's great for basketball. I think it is. I know Panjanovic was down on it, but I just love that all these stars are playing in this game, and it's the right two teams in the way that these were the teams we thought were going to be here, and it's fun to watch them play again.
No, there's star
but,
power.
But Durant,
sure.
I watched a ton of The Jump today on ESPN, and that's all they talked about. It was like Durant versus LeBron.
And Durant actually does pretty well against LeBron James.
Yeah, you know, Golden State, too, is one of those teams. I mean, obviously with Durant, you can go inside now, but, you know, they've got that outside shooting. If that dries up...
Yeah, that's true. That's fickle.
Then I heard you jamming on the Predators, getting all over their stuff.
I don't know, man. It would be really annoying if they did this run, including, you know, destroying the Blackhawks, to then just turn back into the Predators in the final. You know what I mean?
Well, the Penguins chased Pecorine from the net last night. So.
Well, yeah, I know. You're a Penguins guy. I get it. But I'm just saying, like, you'd like to see them continue.
Well, if the Blackhawks can't win, I've got to, you know, I got to go with the Pens. There we go.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Dimitri Martin is going to be here, the stand-up comedian turned filmmaker. His debut film, Dean, is out in theaters this weekend. So we'll talk with him about not only the film, but his career on stage. That's coming up at the Big Table, 8 o'clock. Well, speaking of film, in 2016, producers and filmmakers spent about $500 million, half a billion dollars in the state of Illinois. These numbers given by the Illinois Film Office, the arm of the state government that recruits and lobbies film and television to the area, most notably with a 30% tax credit, which is about standard for states in this country to give to film producers and such. That has helped land all sorts of television and film, including Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Empire, a slew of other network shows. Then you have all the Netflix and Amazon shows like Joe Swanberg's Easy, which is starting up season 2, Stephen Conrad's Patriot. And not to mention all the films that are shot here. So can we expect the same numbers from 2017? It's summertime, and that usually means big productions are coming through. Christine Dudley is the director of the Illinois Film Office, and she joins me now. Christine, great to see you. Thanks
for being here. Hey, great to see you, Justin. Good to be together again.
So when you throw that number out, half a billion dollars, I mean, that's up from 2015.
That is.
Was it surprising to you that the number went up that much?
No, because the episodic television that you just suggested, along with the streaming... that has come to town. I mean, really, the roots are running much deeper. We were $320 million in 2015, and then the half a billion. And it just it speaks to both the community. It speaks to the growth industry. Right now, we are number one in the region for film production. We're number three in the country for television commercial advertising.
So that
production.
Was saying that's after California, New York.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're number one in the region, number three for commercial advertising, and we're in the top six in the country for film production. And that really has been a steady growth since 2011. And episodic television certainly is. It puts the roots in there. But we have to remember that we are also very strong in the commercial advertising production. And because of such storied advertisers as Leo Burnett and DDB and, you know, really, you know, Tony the Tiger was born in Chicago, right? So, you know, those are the Onion is here. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. And they're one of our bigger customers, if you will, because of all the product and the content that they're putting out online streaming. And, you know, some of the, you know, the funniest stuff going, everybody, you know, gets a giggle out of the Onion. But, you know, it's really about the industry. It's about the jobs.
Yeah.
In those numbers, what is also reflected is 13,372 job hires. And that's a significant amount of job hires in a community that's growing. The other part that we really look at, and remember, when we talk about those numbers, that's only what we track at the film office. That doesn't anticipate the multiplier. For every person who's working, they're spending more money because they have a job.
And that's a lot with that $500 million is what they're spending, right?
That's what they're spending, what qualifies for the incentive.
Okay, so let's talk about that incentive because it's now, I mean, what are we coming up on, 9 years of 2008?
2008 was the first, the second incarnation of the incentive.
And you mentioned, you know, number one in the region, but that also you have to, the caveat is that other states, I think it's Wisconsin, maybe Indiana,
no,
Michigan,
Wisconsin
they
doesn't
don't do
have
it
one,
at all.
Indiana don't have
yeah.
one. But Ohio, I got my eyes on Ohio. Boom, eyes on Ohio.
But I mean, can you correlate the success of the Chicago and state of Illinois film industry and the way that it has grown up to the idea that we have a robust tax credit?
Absolutely. I think that there's no question about it. What happened in, you know, in the late 90s when Canada instituted such a program.
Right.
And we talked about this off air, called the Runaway Production. And when the movie Chicago was filmed in Toronto, that's kind of was the breaking point. So states across the country looked at this opportunity. California in particular was, of course, apoplectic over the whole concept. But remembering that we always had a very strong film community here. I mean, going back to Jane Byrne opening the doors for Blues Brothers, John Hughes and the storied days of John Hughes, and all of the things that we all remember and still watch. Ferris Bueller sits behind my desk in a big poster. So we had infrastructure. We had a lot of things within our community that preexisted. Other states implemented these tax credits. A decision was made, I believe, and I was not around for that, but let's not go too crazy because we've got assets and we've got an infrastructure. So what's going to work that's going to be sustainable? And most importantly, direct the dollars to revenue and to jobs. Rather, we don't do what's called out-of-state residents or above the line. The state of Georgia, which is a very significant competitor, they do that. But at the end of the day, it's about sustainability and it's about showing results.
Well, haven't we seen, we've seen this trend where I think of Georgia or New Mexico was one where they would throw everything. I mean, the kitchen sink at Hollywood Productions to come film there for all of the things that you can get out of the
economic. They didn't have anything to begin with, so they had to grow it all. Bring everybody
in. And you've seen that trend kind of go away, where states are moving away from the idea of saying, you know, if you're going to come here, you know, you're not going to get a free ride. Do you see at any time with the Illinois Film Office a time when a tax credit won't be available to?
It's hard to say. The competitive marketplace right now as it relates. And again, if you're producing numbers and you're showing the impact is successful and the impact is working, I think it's up to, you know, and we see there's no doubt our metrics are so, you know, 2011, again, big boom started when Boss came here, which I still miss.
Kelsey Grammer, right?
Kelsey Grammer and that, you know, fabulous, fabulous show. And so, again, you have to measure it. And if you're looking at success, and we are, we see nothing but success. The other thing is the residual that grows around it. And again, Illinois offers a greater infrastructure than other states. We don't have to import people because, and what's happening is we're seeing growth in businesses. The ancillary businesses that support the film industry are reestablishing themselves here, or new businesses are growing and building, and they don't get the credit itself, but they're buying, they're renting, they're hiring people. And it's just so exciting to watch because it's just this growth that's growing and growing.
There was always a, I guess the story of Illinois film and television production was, yes, you will come here for location. People will come here at the ER. I go back to the days of they'll come here and do exteriors. But when it's time for the bread and butter, they go back to L.A. for the sound stages and for everything else. Editing is L.A. There was always a thought that there's no way that you could really grow a film industry without the other things, without editing, without sound stages.
And now we have all
that.
But
that's what I'm saying. It's changing. As you think about that, the concept that Chicago could be a player to bring some of these things here, but now to be an actual player for an industry, an emerging industry, not unlike the tech sector or somewhere else. I mean, do you see this just being the beginning of what could be a sort of Hollywood Central for?
You know, and again, I always say I don't want to be New York and I don't want to be California. Let's be who we are because we have a proud tradition here. And one of the things that studio executives tell me, independent producers, the work ethic in Illinois from our crews, their acting talent, as you well know, second to none.
Yeah, right.
Second to none. So all of these assets are here, and the more success there is of these shows, the more movies. We're seeing a resurgence in feature films and a different kind of feature film than the Transformers and the Batmans. We're really seeing that nuance kind of narrative, great storytelling, and directors are choosing, again, to come here. So I just see that and the other part about it is the education.
Yeah.
We've got such great institutions. DePaul University, in the top 20 of film schools in the United States.
I know they had a good acting
program. In the last 5 years.
And I would think that more you'll see that from all of the universities turning themselves into
Northwestern
more of that kind
of thing. Coming online. Basically, they were training and turning people out. The retention and the opportunity, and you know this, Justin, from your background and back in the Wayback Machine when I was thinking I would hit the boards and be an actress, and that was a long time ago. Chicago was your first stop on your way to L.A. That's no longer the case, and you mentioned at the top, you know, Steve Conrad, who is, you know, a Chicagoan. He's brought Patriot here for Amazon. They're getting ready to start their second season. You know, Joe Schwanberg and Easy and all of the things that Joe has done for the community. We're just seeing, you don't have to be in LA. You don't have to be in New York. You can be here because it's accessible and we have the assets.
Christine Dudley is my guest. She's the director of the Illinois Film Office. And before we get into the fun part of what is actually shooting here this summer, and there's a lot of great stuff, you know, the credit really is, and the Sun-Times did a piece on this as well. I mean, the credit is you have to make sure that minorities are getting hired. You got to make sure that women are being hired. How do you make sure that Hollywood is going, sure, we're doing that?
No, because they have to. And actually, I have to tell you, the other thing, because of that part of the statute, which requires all of this, we've seen great growth. And because it's not mandated, but it is, you know, best efforts and opportunity, again, you know, we've seen it grow from 11%. I was doing some credits the other day, and they have to give us all this data. It's not, you know, we thought about it, or we,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
I mean, we, an
you
independent CPA,
right,
you know, provides a attestation to us. We review that. I mean, it's very complex. It's not McDonald's. You don't just drive through and get it. You know, there's lots of things that go into this, and that's another market that's emerging, the professional services. You know, I want to talk to kids in the business schools at these universities. You want to have some fun? You know, the guys who are counting the beans and doing that stuff are just as powerful in production as the folks in front of the camera, which are very few.
Right.
So Hollywood's been very reactive, and it's a good selling point for us because
absolutely,
we're the only state in the country that requires diversity. New Mexico, my friends in New Mexico, the film commissioner there, he said, but we're so diverse, we don't have to have it.
Oh, right.
But,
sure.
But that's okay. That's okay. We've seen a lot of growth. We've seen a lot of merging. And Hollywood and producers react very favorably to it. And as a result, there has been greater opportunity.
All right, Christine, what do we got coming up here? So we've got, I mean, like you said a little bit earlier, I mean, we're used to summers with Transformers. That's sort of like what we've known to be the film production season here in Chicago. But talk about what we can expect this summer in Chicago and in Illinois.
And, you know, because of streaming and because the ever-shifting media landscape, you know, the traditional, I just was, and you know, all the upfronts, which are when the traditional networks roll out.
Yeah, right.
Their fall season just transpired a couple weeks ago. But what we're seeing is, you know, with Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, that it's an ongoing production season. Tomorrow, Empire's back. I mean, they're setting up their offices. They start filming in July. So Empire will be back, which is terrific. Comedy Central is going to be here this summer. And they still an untitled Southside project. But again, this is a great new piece of diversity because nobody like you knows better that the comedic talent in this town, we need comedy, you know, on TV. Hot Date from Pop TV. Pop TV's just, it's growing. They're net, you know, all of the things that I happen to be a fan of. A show called Schitt's Creek, and that's S-C-H-I-T-T.
Christopher Guest crew, right.
And The Chi is also coming and filming right now, and that's a Showtime series.
That's right, yeah.
And a local director and writer. Fox is producing for Showtime. Very big, very big opportunity, again, to just, you know, showcase the talent here. And that's an episodic. Electric Dreams, Philip Dick, who's become very popular because of The Man in the High Castle. Amazon and Sony are producing an anthology series here of some very big talent.
Wow, that's good stuff.
Easy, as you already mentioned.
Yeah, that show's great.
AV Club, which is part of the Onion Infusion Network, has got a great, with John Teddy, and a great variety show mm-hmm. that they're producing. And some summer films. Right now, as we speak, Widows is a production that Oscar winner Stephen McQueen, for those of us who are older, we remember a different Stephen McQueen. This is Oscar winning Stephen McQueen. Is producing a feature film, starring Oscar winner Viola Davis with Oscar winner Robert Duvall and Colin Farrell and Liam Neeson. And this is a very big production. It's terrific to see that they're here, and it's a story. It's a fun story, I think, and kind of tragic at the same time, but about widows who take over a heist that their husbands got, you know.
Regardless, just the idea that there might be a Robert Duvall walking around Michigan Avenue. I'm in.
Yeah, no, it's all good. And then we've got Rampage coming in with Dwayne Johnson. They're going to do some fun stuff on Lakeshore Drive. My colleague at the Chicago Film Office is taking care of all of that.
Yeah, just do it in the morning.
Yeah, I'm not involved in that. They have to work out the logistics. And then we've got a really good film that's coming up, and I can't give you much information, but Joe Chappelle, who's one of the directors and producers of Chicago Fire, has taken leave from that show and has written, I think, a terrific, terrific script. And along with his wife, Colleen Griffin, they are going to be producing this fabulous feature film. Majority of it's going to be filmed up in Evanston, but all around the Chicagoland area. It's an intriguing, suspenseful movie, and it's got, I will tell you, a fabulous cast. There'll be stay tuned for all of that. Yeah. So we've got lots of things that are happening out there, and we closed a couple other feature films, What They Had, with Blythe Danner and Hillary, an Oscar winner, may I say, Hillary Swank. That great little movie that was filmed here with Michael Shannon, Oscar nominee, and obviously no stranger to the Chicago theater community. So lots of great and wonderful things happening, and lots of diversity.
Well, we'll be paying attention to that. Christine Dudley is the director of the Illinois Film Office, telling us about what's shooting here in Chicago and the state of Illinois this summer. Christine, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Hey, it was a blast. Thanks.
Always good to have Christine Dudley in studios. It's fun to have her. All right. Coming up, speaking of film, Dimitri Martin is going to be my guest tonight at the big table. Coming up 8 o'clock, talk about his film, Dean. Also, Usman Ali will be in also in the 9 o'clock hour, so we'll talk to him about acting. A longtime Chicago theater guy who has moved on to shows like Veep or Nobody's or a series of unfortunate events on Netflix. So we'll talk with him about his career acting. So a lot going on tonight with the actors and the film. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a musician, an artist, a filmmaker, and a stand-up comedian, a true Renaissance man. Chicago, put your hands together for Dimitri Martin.
When I'm cleaning up my apartment, I feel like my dustpan is willing to help out, but just to a point. They're like, all right, cool. It's just a little bit left here. And then the dustpan's like, I'm out right here. No, come on, dustpan. There's just dust left. I mean, you're called a dustpan. Let's just do this. I'm not picking that up. The hell you're not. We're going to go perpendicular. You're picking this up. It's like, I said no. Take the broom and just redistribute it around the room. I've seen a lot of proud sponsors of things. I'd like to see a reluctant sponsor. Subaru, reluctant sponsor of the WNBA. I wish they would just call the news What's Wrong. Hi, it's 6 o'clock. Here's what's wrong. Yeah. Now for the local news. Here's the worst that happened the closest to you.
Dimitri Martin has made his name in comedy. He's been featured on late night talk shows, on Comedy Central, and of course his own comedy albums. He's produced two to date, one on the way. Martin's also an actor and a filmmaker now. He's been in several films, and coming up on June 2nd, he'll make his directorial debut with the film Dean, in which he wrote and he stars in as well. Dimitri Martin is a comedic force, and he is in studio tonight, my guest at the big table. Dimitri, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is a great film. I really enjoyed the film. I got a chance to see it. It's a departure in the sense that it's a dramedy, if you will. It's a little different than what you do with your stand-up. Where does it come from, especially the idea of doing something that's different than a joke a minute?
Yeah, I call it a dramedy, too, which is, I think, a dangerous form, because I think when it works, it can be great. Some of my favorite movies are dramedies, but when it doesn't, you're just dead in the water. It's because it's like it's neither here nor there. You know, it's a tricky game to play. For me, it was... I think as a film fan, years ago I thought, you know, someday I'd love to try to make a movie, or a few of them if I could, and try to take some of my comedic ideas and put them in a different form, you know, or a different medium. So when it came time to really give it a shot, I decided for whatever reason to start with something personal, maybe because it's an easier way into telling a longer story. And I wanted to dig a little deeper. You can do a lot with stand-up, but with film, you can do different things. You have music, you can create a world, and of course you get to work with other people, unless mm-hmm. you do some weird movie that's just some one dude. But mm-hmm. and those, there can be good ones like that. But you know, I've thought, no, I'd like to work with other actors. So with those kinds of, I guess you could say, tools at your disposal or devices, it just seemed like an opportunity to do something that was a little more heartfelt, a little more emotional.
For you, I mean, is there any challenge in trying to go personal with your first independent film?
Yeah, I think it turns out I've learned that I'm a pretty private person. I like doing stand-up and I like being in front of people, but I don't tell my life story up there. I'm not someone who's into talking too much about myself, maybe because I have a healthy dose of self-loathing. I just...
As a great artist does.
Right, but right. You know what I mean? Like if I talk about myself, then I start to get sick of the material telling the same story, and then I start to hate the material, then I start to hate myself because the material is about me, and it's just a whole cycle I get stuck in. But if I do a joke about a telephone pole or something, then it's just like it's an object. It's a thing. The joke is right. Like, well, here's a joke about a bottle of water. Here's what I think about it. Yeah, so that made it difficult for me to, let's just say, transition or to try something in this different medium, because I don't know, I quickly realized that I wasn't going to be too fulfilled if I just made a movie that was a bunch of jokes. I wanted it to be something more.
Right. I mean, as being the writer and the star of the movie, director as well, I mean, do you find yourself, when you sit down and start to write the script, I mean, it almost is memoir-like in the way that you're I mean, obviously there's things that yeah. have changed in the movie that are yeah. different than your personal story. But, I mean, do you set – in that regard, I mean, there's so many different ways you could go as an artist and a comedian because you've done so many different projects.
Yeah.
You know, being a comedic writer and focusing on your own story, talk about that. Talk about the challenges that go along with that as well.
Well, one thing I did which made it more fun for me was I really did fictionalize the story I was telling so that – while I dealt with very real things that have happened to me and my family emotionally, the specific content I decided I want to tell a more made-up story. So, for example, in my own life, I lost my father at a young age. I was 20. He was 46. In the movie, and I have siblings. In the movie, I'm an only child, and I've lost my mother. Of course, the character doesn't live where I lived. And, you know, there's plenty. It's pretty much kind of, I guess, in the details, all fiction, but yet underneath it all is there are some very real things I went through. So I think that helped me avoid, let's call it reportage or kind of a straight translation from my own life into a story. And it also made it more exciting for me to come up with characters and to take a first shot at writing other people and writing scenes for other people and thinking a little bit outside myself. Stand-up is something that I love, and I'm guessing I always will, but it is very self-involved. I think it doesn't teach you necessarily a lot about thinking about other people or writing. You know, you can observe, but to try to get into a character's head, that's a little different.
Did you find yourself as a writer, as someone who has had such success on stage? I mean, when you're doing your stand-up and you can put together and some of the greatest stuff you've done, I mean, it's almost non sequitur. You can go joke. And very, I feel like, and I know his inspiration, like Stephen Wright's style.
Absolutely, or, yeah.
Do you find yourself writing a script like this, a dramedy, where you're really getting to emotional places and you're talking about death and grief? Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself having to pull back on, I'm going to put a joke in here, or I'm going to do something, and then realizing, no, I got to be true to the story?
Yeah, I did find that. That was one of the challenges for sure. I didn't want to end up having scenes dictated by jokes or having the joke kind of wag the dog of the scene. You know what I mean? I wanted to... try to write a real story and something that might be compelling and draw people in, but then say, okay, let me trust myself and just assume that I'll find places for there to be laughs so that I can make this a comedy. Because, you know, it was important to me. I wanted it to be a funny movie. Yeah, that was hard. And now even the surprising thing for me is that it's kind of turning back towards stand-up in a way, which is to say, after making the movie, now I'm thinking more emotionally. I'm trying to figure out, hey, how do I make comedy that's based more on how I feel or...
Really?
Yeah, things that matter to me. It's challenging because I'm, for whatever reason, naturally drawn to just talking about, like, I don't know, objects or just random small things that I do find funny, and it's entertaining for me. A lot of what I like about stand-up is coming up with jokes, just walking around and daydreaming and writing them down and then trying them out to see if my calculations are correct or whatever. But yeah, I think maybe being a little bit older, having a couple of kids now and a wife, it's changed me in very predictable ways.
It's interesting too, because you've had such success on stage, and in a way this is the standard evolution of a performer.
Yeah.
You know, having that success, I mean, has been great for your career, obviously, to be able to have the movie Dean and everything in between. But you, as you talk about, you want to make a change, you want to evolve into a different kind of comic. Do the same practices apply when you try to reinvent yourself or put yourself on stage as it was when, you know, 20 years ago when you're like starting out and trying things and trying to become a stand-up comedian?
Yeah, I think that's one of the great things about stand-up that makes me, it keeps me challenged, and I think it also makes me relate to a lot of my friends who are comics in a really specific way. And that is that even if you've had some success, however much you've had, even just getting your material to work, you got to do it again. You got to come up with new stuff. And I know Seinfeld has famously talked about this, and Chris Rock, people, lots of comics I respect who are much more successful than I am. But I think it's a real thing. You know, you can get some goodwill when you first come on stage, but that doesn't matter. Like, even within the same set, at minute one or two, they love you. And then 7 minutes later, it's like, all right, well, where's the new material? You know? So yeah, it's hard. I think growth is difficult. And then if you try to step out of your comfort zone, it's even harder. But it seems like it can be even more rewarding. And it's validating. You feel like, okay, cool, I'm still growing as a person here and as an artist or whatever you want to call it, as a comedian. So, you know, it's a privilege to get to do comedy or to do any creative job, I think, and get money. Sometimes I feel like the world is designed specifically not to give people money for being creative. You know what I mean? That is the struggle.
There is something there.
It's just like, get in line, stupid. Nobody cares about your story or your movie or your joke, like, or your painting, whatever it is. Like, we're not giving you money. So if you get any money for it, I have to keep reminding myself just to be grateful, you know?
Comedian Dimitri Martin in studio tonight. His new film, his directorial debut, Dean, is out in theaters on June 2nd. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Dimitri Martin at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, comedian Dimitri Martin. He's got a brand new film, his directorial debut, in which he stars. He wrote the script as well, the movie called Dean. The movie, we talked about it in the first segment, really had a lot to do with grief and loss. In this case, the character lost his mother, and how you and your dad deal with that. But there's also other themes in there that I thought were really interesting. One, this idea of creativity and pay, and you sort of had the scene at the ad agency.
Yeah.
But also this idea of friendship. There seems to be a lot in there about the kind of friends that your character has. What do you expect from each other as you grow older?
Yeah.
Talk about that. I mean, was that intentional for you to explore friendship, or at least, you know, friendship between, you know, older men?
Yeah, that was definitely intentional. My experience as a comedian has involved a lot of traveling alone. And sometimes I tell people I feel like a drifter. You know, you go to a town, you don't talk to anybody all day. You're just there. You just show up in Houston, and you don't know anybody. And, you know, then you're going to go do a show at night. So you kind of don't speak all day. And then you go on stage and talk for 80 minutes or something. And you're the only one who gets to talk in front of like 1,000 people. Or if you're doing a comedy club, when you do a week or 5 days at a comedy club, you're in like a city or a town for five, six days. So it's just kind of weird. Each day, you're just like, all right, I have all day. What am I going to do here? You know, maybe you can write, go to the museum, I don't know, go eat, and then you do the show at night. So it's all kind of backloaded into the later part of the day. But your friends, if you're a comic and you've been doing it a while, most of them are going to be comedians probably, because those are your people. Those are your colleagues in the rooms. Even when you're at home in New York or LA or Chicago, wherever you live, you know, you do rooms and you pop around and you see the same people and you get to know the other comics. And that was my experience coming up in New York. I was there for 14 years, and just about every one of my friends was a comedian. I had some friends who were musicians, a couple artists, and some people who weren't in showbiz, but mostly it was comics. So for me, friends were kind of family for a long time. Yeah. And a lot of us don't end up having families. We don't end up getting married or having kids or anything. So a lot of my experience as adult has been as just a single dude who's a comic traveling around, even to international festivals. So I thought that would be something interesting to explore in a movie, even if it were not one of the main themes, adult friendship, and specifically kind of suspended adolescence, yeah. which I think is a very real thing in our time.
Well, it's also this grass is greener on the other side kind of yeah. concept, you know, and a lot of comedians and artists, and even in Chicago we have that too, where people move to L.A. They say, you got to come out here. Oh, it's yeah. so great. You got to come out here. Yeah. Like, you feel like you're missing something.
Right.
And then you get out there and they're like, I really can't hang out. I'm really busy. Yeah, and then totally. You find yourself even lonelier in a space where all your friends are at.
Loneliest I've ever been was when I used to visit L.A. for business to try to sell a show or get a deal or something. Yeah, you're just out there and it's like nobody's around or nobody's available or you got to make plans. I don't know how Chicago is, but in New York, I could just spontaneously show up. Yeah. People show up. People come out. Like they show up. Yeah. You know, you can hang out. In L.A., when you do get to hang out with people, I've made some wonderful friends. And it's interesting because people have dinner parties. You get to go to people's houses. People have houses, even little houses. You can get a house. So you can have people over. You hang out for like 6 hours or 8 hours. You know, it's really cool. You get to know people faster. That's probably why there are a lot of cults there because you can just – they just yeah, pull you right house, in. Right. You know what I mean? Suddenly in your pajamas, you're like, what am I doing? Oh, my God. But it's hard to get them to show up. It's hard to yeah. actually connect with the people. So, yes, but still, friendship is – you know, goes without saying. It's just so important. What's interesting now is that I am married and I have two kids, so it gets even harder to see your friends.
Right.
So in a way, making the movie was an opportunity to hang out with a guy like Rory Scovel, who is a friend, and some of the other actors became friends. I didn't know a lot of the people that are in the movie. Even Kevin Klein, who we're not going to be buddies. He's Kevin Klein. He's from a different generation, and he's a very accomplished actor. But he was really gracious and genuinely very cool. And, you know, I loved his work before the movie, and I was psyched about what he did in the movie, but what was really cool was after the movie was over, and if I visit New York, you know, he'll have me over. Or
that's
my
great.
Wife and I
yeah.
had lunch with him and his wife once, and it was, you know, just really cool.
And that's a big part of how actors and directors and filmmakers and artists get to know each other. It's the projects they work on, and yeah. they collaborate with, they move on. The other thing about the movie, which I really took from, was the idea of connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned that a little bit there in that answer, but this concept and Kevin Klein is looking for connection, your character is looking for connection. Yeah. Everybody, even some of the side characters are just looking for connection. Well, how important is that? I mean, for you as an artist, but also as a filmmaker to explore the idea of finding a connection in other human beings.
I think it's a really important issue that seems very relevant these days, and I'm not the first to talk about it. And I didn't, of course, build the movie around that, but I think about it all the time. I find social media to be very alienating, and I'm not great at it. I'm also a guy in his 40s, so fair enough. You know, I can do my little posts and I do my stupid tweets and stuff, but I don't really find it very rewarding. And
right.
the truth is, for me, I don't usually feel better after I use social media. It just doesn't work well for me. I think maybe other people build their life around it and find fulfillment in it, but I don't. I feel disconnected.
Yeah.
I still like hanging out with people in person and, you know, getting below the surface and having a real conversation. I don't know. I think, like a lot of people, I'm looking for genuine connection. I'm not particularly lonely these days. I have my friends and I have my little family, but yeah, it's still really stimulating when you meet a new friend and you find someone you really have something in common with or someone who challenges you. Or, you know, I remember that first year in college. You get to college and you're up till like 2 a.m. talking with people and you feel like, I found my people. And like, you know, it's just amazing, you know. It's hard to find that. And like, yeah. as life goes on, we just kind of solidify into things. And it's like we become less limber. And sometimes it feels like our minds do too. And maybe socially as well. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, empathy just seems to be like such an important thing. And when you really connect with people, it feels like empathy is a big part of the equation. And when that's missing, I think you end up with a colder world. You know, the internet is a very cold medium. And
yeah.
if you're snarky, if you're mean, maybe racist, you know, it's a great place. You can do lots of damage. But I think it takes a little more work to really connect with people and to listen to other people and to try to imagine what they're going through. That's honestly one of the things I like about the idea of making films and telling stories and writing fiction for that matter. I'm trying to learn how to write short stories. Because, again, it's different than writing one-liners. And it's just, it's character. It's thinking beyond yourself. It's empathy.
Yeah.
Trying to think about other people and what they feel, what they're afraid of,
yeah,
what they're inspired by. You know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Comedian Dimitri Martin in studio. His new
hilarious.
Film.
I'm being so hilarious today. I just realized.
I don't know if I told you this is just the big table is 1 hour of stand up. So I don't know.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
We're
no,
doing
I am
no,
bombing no, hard here.
No, you're doing great. Dimitri Martin. His new film is called Dean. It's out on June 2nd. His directorial debut, which he wrote the script, stars in it. Did some of the editing as well.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that. We'll take a break for the news, and we'll come back, and we'll continue the conversation with Dimitri Martin in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Dimitri Martin, the stand-up comedian and now filmmaker. He made his directorial debut with his film Dean. He was the director. He starred in it. He wrote the script, did some of the editing. What's a Dimitri Martin set like? I mean, you have to think about, I mean, you're essentially the boss when you're,
yeah.
Wearing all those hats. I mean, going for when you're trying to set?
So much more serious than I wanted it to be. I was so worried the whole time. This whole thing, it's just a giant ball of fear is my whole memory of this thing. Because, you know, you want to make a movie. I wrote the script. I wrote it on spec, as they say, because nobody paid me for it. Nobody was even waiting for it. Nobody knew about it. And then you write the script and you try to find a producer and hopefully find the money and then find the cast. You know, if you're lucky, you get to make a movie. Well, I got what I wanted. I got lucky enough that Kevin Kline agreed to do it. That led to getting the financing. And here we go. We're in production.
Right.
And then suddenly it's like somebody called your bluff. And you're like, uh-oh. I'm in trouble here. Like, this is serious. And each day, it's like, if there's a problem, it just compounds. You know, if you didn't get that scene, now we got to push it to day two.
And a lot of it's problem solving, right?
A lot of it's problem solving. And for me, the logistics were the absolute nightmare of it. It was, you know, I don't want to discourage people out there, but man, just be careful. And then you go put your name and your face on it. It's just like, you're just doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on the potential public humiliation that you will face.
And that's anxiety.
It's anxiety,
right.
You know?
Right, right.
You know, I'm fine with stand-up. I thankfully, for whatever reason, I wasn't nervous even in the beginning. I like being up there. I bomb plenty, but it's okay. But you make a film, now you're pulling other people down with you. When you die as a comic, that's just like dying alone. But this is like a mass, this is like a mass killing, you know what I mean? You're pulling people off a cliff with you. And it's just like trying to make a parachute before you hit the ground.
Was film always something in the back of your mind when you got into the entertainment business? And because you've done stand-up specials.
Yeah.
You've done television shows for Comedy Central.
Yeah.
You've acted in movies and TV.
Yeah.
I mean, but to say that you wrote this script on spec and developed it, was that always the goal for you?
No. My goal was just to be a comedian. Not just. My goal was to be a comedian. I wanted to be a stand-up. I loved stand-up when I was in high school, when I first saw stand-up on TV. I wasn't a comedy nerd. I didn't know a lot about comedy as a kid, but then I found my way into it. My dad loved comedy. He loved SNL. He loved Peter Sellers. I got to see the Pink Panther movies as a really young kid, and Peter Sellers is still one of my favorites. So the idea of being a comedian was a fantasy, and that emerged pretty late for me because I went to law school. You know, I planned to go to college and law school, and I thought I was going to be a lawyer. But somewhere along the way, I guess maybe in law school, it started to become a tangible idea.
Yeah.
You know, I was in New York, so there were comedy clubs there. Anyway, so the goal was specifically stand-up comedy. But once I started doing it, probably after 2 or 3 years, then I started to dream differently, where I thought, well, wait a minute, now that I've taken the leap.
There's more opportunities. There's different networks and people are interested in you, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and also just your creative life, let's call it, your daily routine of the process of trying to come up with ideas. You know, there's something so exciting about that because you're trading in potential here, you know. It's a daydream. Doesn't mean any of it's going to happen, but there's nobody stopping you, at least in your head, unless you're particularly messed up. Then that voice is crushing things before you can,
yeah, right.
You know, and that voice is there, but
It's a real thing, right?
Yeah, I keep it to the side, try to stuff things into its mouth so I can't understand what it's saying, but it comes out and it's really useful in editing that voice. Then I pull the stuff out of its mouth. I'm like, all right, let me have it. Let's hear it. You know, now you need to save me. I didn't want to hear from you before. Just let me come up with stuff and stop judging me. But yeah, it became another kind of dream in a sense. But it's funny. That's the funny thing about dreams is like two things I found about dreams is the closer you get to them, it's kind of like the more attractive the exits become.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be a comedian and then you get a great job as a writer. There's nothing wrong with writer, but if you, what you wanted to do was comedian, are you gonna are
there's
you out?
There's always something pulling you away from it.
There right? is, yeah. And a lot of
even
those
at the successful at your level where you get specials and albums, there's always something. It's like there's a shinier object
yeah.
over here.
And of course, you can easily imagine. It's interesting to do an interview and hear somebody describe me as successful. I feel successful in as much as I get to do this job, but I'm like as worried as anybody that I'm not going to get to work tomorrow, that people are going to stop coming to my shows. Will I get to make another movie? You know, will anybody cast me in anything? You know, it's just such a game. It's L.A. doesn't help it. Like living in L.A., it's really weird to drive down the street and see a lot of your friends on billboards because I've been around long enough. So it kind of goes up and down.
Right.
I get a chance, I get a shot, and then maybe the show gets canceled, doesn't work. Then someone else's turn, and then...
Just as a human being, and that experience, I think, for myself and the listeners here at the Download, I mean, we don't have that experience as a human being of going down Michigan Avenue and looking up and seeing your friends or yourself or anybody on a billboard.
Yeah,
and talk
weird.
About that. It has to be weird, and I mean, the emotion that comes out of that, your own to see it, but also at the same time to maybe be in a space where you're down because they didn't pick up a project and
yeah.
see someone else that you know.
Exactly, and I think it gets complicated because one thing I've always been grateful for is that I don't want what anybody else has. I don't feel jealous of people's specific thing, but it does, I think, in the weaker moments make you feel like, oh, it feels like a zero-sum game, even if it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, if them, then not me. You know, uh-oh, I'm done. You know, I'm not going to get it. And then at the same time, you're kind of proud, you know, especially if it's a good friend.
Yeah, right.
Like John Oliver's an old friend, and I couldn't be happier for him. I mean, he's doing great. But yeah, I saw him on like a 7-story building. You know, I mean, we knew each other when neither of us were anything. Not that we're anything now, but John, man, he's doing pretty well. You know, it's like oh my God, he's like in the news. Like he's a newsworthy person right now. Will Forte's an old friend. I really like his show. So, you know, and Forte's on my first album, which we recorded.
Yeah.
It was called the Lakeshore Theater at the time.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it was. I love
that.
That's
a laugh factory now.
It's a laugh factory. I know. Which I find kind of sad, you know. I'm sure it's a good room, but just even the word factory in it, you know, it was so, felt so personal and intimate when it was the Lakeshore Theater. So yeah, it's weird. But if you're around for a while, you know that there are ups and downs. And if you're lucky, you just feel a little more grateful when you're actually on an upswing, you know. And I'm counting this as one because people are giving me attention. I'm getting to do press. The movie will be released. And right now, I don't read the reviews anyway, so I don't know who doesn't like it. And it hasn't lost money yet because it hasn't come out yet. So right now,
why don't you read the reviews? Did you just learn at a certain point? Is it the same with everything from YouTube comments down the line? You just
decided, for me, it's the same. Yeah,
you and just got rid of it.
At replies on Twitter and all that stuff. It's just the simple formula for me is, and it's the same. I gotta say, my wife and I talk about this. Just like even hanging out with people, maybe you've had this experience. There are people that you like for whatever reason, and maybe you've known them for a while, but then after a while. I don't know. I start to notice, geez, every time I hang out with that guy afterwards, I feel like garbage. I don't know if it's his problem, my problem, whatever it is. It just becomes a simple kind of calculus.
Yeah.
It's like a before and after. Whether it's a person, the content, reading about yourself, Googling yourself, whatever it is. It's like, geez, I noticed that after that, I never feel better.
Right.
So,
yeah. that's
it's like eating certain
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
Maybe this bag of Skittles... You know, no disrespect to Skittles if they're a sponsor, but you know what I mean? As I'm eating it.
And I would imagine, I mean, it goes both ways. I mean, you probably feel something different, but you don't feel great just because you've read something good about yourself.
That's my experience is like, and then what happens is, at least for me, it messes with your head. Then you get to a point where if somebody likes you, you're like, well, they're stupid. Why do you like me? You're an idiot. Don't you see? And then I was working on a new stand-up bit about mean comments. Which is not original territory, but I realized what the problem is. They're right. You know, not all of them, but they're crowdsourcing your insecurities.
Yep.
So in the aggregate, you're finding people are hitting, somebody's hitting it on the head. They're finding exactly what I hate about myself, what I don't like about myself. They're just like tapping directly into my fears. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm fine. I know what I don't like about myself already. I think I can spare myself that. I'd rather spend time drawing or working on my next script, you know. And isn't it funny to Google yourself? The internet, is access to pretty much all the information ever. And the one thing you don't need to know more about is yourself. Of everything that's
everything,
on the internet.
All the information, right?
There's probably, you know, yes, I want to learn more about my soul or my, you know, spirituality, whatever. There's more to learn about yourself, but not in that way. Not what some dude has to say about me.
You know, what I love about your work and I love about the movie is there all the topics that we're talking about surface in this movie, whether it be relationships or connection, grief, loss, just self, you know, security, things like that. The other part of it as well, and we didn't get a chance to really talk about it, is about your illustrations. They're your drawings. You're in the – plays a huge role in the movie of whether you're doodling at some point and the focus is on what you're actually drawing or using the illustrations to illustrate your feelings. I mean, when you're depressed, the drawings are depressing. There's something about it. You know, when you have that skill, when you have the ability to draw and be artistic in that form
– yeah.
You know, and you've always used it in your stand-up. How important is it to use it? How important is it to develop that skill and have it be a part of your artistic output?
Yeah, for me, I've always found that drawing is therapeutic, the act of drawing. And when I learned to let go of my ambition in drawing or judging the quality of my drawings, because any listeners out there who've seen my drawings would agree that they're not technically great. They're simple. But they communicate ideas, and I think they're effective often at communicating what I'm trying to communicate. And that I find value in sharing them with other people. But for me, mostly, the process of making drawings, it's similar to joke writing for me. I like writing the jokes as much or more than I like telling them. I just like coming up with the ideas. It feels like I'm getting to entertain myself in certain ways. When it came time to make a movie, I decided early on that I would make my character an illustrator because of what you were saying, that I would have this other axis to work on narratively here where we could see what he's thinking and feeling as he goes through this story or this journey so that, you can look at his drawing and say, oh, I see what's going on. And there's something I found very validating about in a visual medium featuring drawings, many of which have no words, or maybe all of them. I don't think I used any drawings that had kind of dialogue bubbles or thoughts. Most of them are, if not all of them, are silent. So it's like having a little silent film that's running through the movie.
It's effective. I mean, it's effective communication, like you said, what the character's actually thinking as opposed to what he's doing.
I like that. As a viewer, as a comedy fan, I loved Gary Larson when I was growing up. And, you know, there's something fun about being on the other side of that for me, where the person who's telling me the story or drew the cartoon, they're giving me a little bit of credit. They're letting me do just a little bit of work to piece together or to roll the next frame. I think one thing about Gary Larson I really like is that some of his drawings deal with imminence. So the drawing is funny to me because of what's about to happen. It's like I get to roll the next frame, or what's just happened, I get to go back and play the movie up until that moment. And there's an economy in that of just, here's the one shot you need, you know?
Comedian Dimitri Martin, now filmmaker, his directorial debut is the film Dean, which he wrote, he stars in. He also did some editing as well. Illustrations are all his in the movie. The movie comes out, Dean comes out on June 2nd. He's my guest tonight at the big table. Dimitri, great to meet you. Thanks for coming in, and good luck with the movie.
Thanks a lot, Justin. This was fun.
Great to have Dimitri Martin on the show. That was, so thoughtful. You know, I love it. We kind of made the joke halfway through that, the idea that you're a stand-up, you're supposed to be funny. But I always liked the idea that, you know, the big table, people can stretch out and you can go to YouTube and catch his jokes.
Yeah.
And he's got great jokes. We even played some at the top. But Dimitri Martin has special after special, whether it be Comedy Central, other places. YouTube, you can check it all out. But to really have a conversation to sit down and be able to talk about just you think about that life, you know, the idea of being a stand-up comedian and going from town to town to town, getting up on stage and playing in front of 300, for in his case, 500,000, 1,200 people, and then kind of going to the next gig. And how we've heard this from a few comedians we've had on the show, that that can be very isolating. It can be somewhat a solo venture.
Yeah, for sure.
Very depressing.
I hate to be so flip about it, but the Tears of the Clown kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. See it on Crashing a bit.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
The Pete Holmes show.
But to think about the fact that you have this strange relationship with an audience where you get up and the light shines on you and you perform where people are drawing from your creativity, your energy, and then you get off stage and you're isolated, that none of it goes with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thought and one that's rarely ever investigated or explored because, you know, most of the time we'll say, you know, boo-hoo. You know, sorry you're a celebrity. You know what I mean? Sorry that you have a life where you can get on stage and 2,000 people are going to laugh at your joke. So I'm so sorry that's bad. But, you know, I think that, you know, if you can get that out of the way, there is some psychological or mental impact on the idea of doing that kind of life. So it's really interesting. But good. That movie comes out this weekend.
Yeah. Can't wait to see it.
Are you going to go see it? Are you going to see Wonder Woman? What do you mean?
Wonder Woman. No.
No. You're not a superhero guy.
No. I'm looking for a movie like Dean. Yeah. I've been waiting all summer for this.
I saw Dean and I will say that it has I can guarantee it probably has less herky jerky camera than Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's just going to be like that DC Comics when if you saw Batman versus Superman, it's just like ooh woo 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 woo. That's my impression of the camera work on Batman Superman. Ooh, woo, 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 woo. Or Suicide Squad, where you're like, what do I hold on to when I'm watching this? It's like so much going on. And when you just see the trailer for Wonder Woman, you're like, that's going to be like caution strobe light kind of vibe to it.
Are you going to go see it?
Yeah, I'm going to go
see weekend?
It. This weekend? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was funny. I came in after Roe and Anna got off, and usually Brian Altmer is here. You know, he's here for Roe and Anna, and he was gone today. And I was like, oh, what superhero movie did he always leaves early when there's a super, he leaves like a few minutes before the end of the show to catch the premiere of the superhero movie. He's always leaving early for superhero movies.
I saw an article today, just when you're talking about movies, that it's actually been a down year for the summer movies, that they're really putting a lot of pressure on Wonder Woman to be a savior, if you will, for like blockbuster movies.
Mm-hmm.
Which is surprising because I thought Guardians of the Galaxy was a big hit, but I guess there hasn't been anything in between. Like there hasn't been like any sort of like strong, huge hits this summer yet. So they're hoping that that's going to do it.
Probably will.
Yeah. You got Spider-Man coming up too.
I'm looking forward to the Big Sick. Is that what it's called? The Kumail movie.
That looks good.
Superheroes, which I know I can't get into it.
I know that is sort of the blockbuster fare. Well, we're going to have the director and the writer and actor of Rough Night, which is the movie with Scarlett Johansson. That's coming up in mid June. That's a comedy.
All right,
with Kate McKinnon, Scarlett Johansson.
Now you're talking.
Is it Jillian Bell? What's the Ilana Glazer? Great from Broad City.
Broad City.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I'm missing people in that, too. Kravitz, Zoe Kravitz in that as well. So, I mean, there's a huge cast of people who are in that movie. That's a sort of comedy ensemble.
Did you take the son to see Wonder Woman?
I think so, yeah. I'm not going on my own. I mean, Wonder Woman is straight up Justice League. You know, and if you follow the comic books, you know, Justice League is the DC version of the Avengers and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the beginning of Justice League. Wonder Woman is going to be the origin story of that character. So it's kind of fun because that's been I kind of talked about this, you know, that my son's not that athletic and he's not really into all the baseball. He doesn't play on a baseball team or a football team, but we've been able to bond over comic books and he really gets into the DC and the Marvel. So I've each birthday in the last couple of birthdays, we've got the encyclopedia, which is essentially a huge coffee table book that breaks down every character's origin story, genesis, where they first showed up, how they were redone, things like that. It's
great.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's great and it's awesome and we read the whole thing, but there's a certain point where you're like, all right, I don't need, you know, when you start getting into the Infinity Wars of, I think that's Marvel, where maybe it's, I can't remember which one it is, but where you get to the point where you're trying to figure out, like, physics. There are two worlds, and there's a realm that was split. And in the one world, you know, the superheroes died. But in the other world, they became, you know, what is it, the Superman, the Bizarro Superman, and that kind of stuff. And you're just like, all right, you know what, guys? Really? Can you just do the Thanos thing and the raccoon that talks and, you know, like put some 70s music in there? Like, it's like that. It really is. I never, growing up, was into comic books. It was not my thing. I didn't know much about the universes. So I'm learning it as an adult, especially just through vicariously through my son.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot that I'm like, really? That's the 42-year-old in me that's like, really? That can't happen.
But I mean, but you go to these, like, you know, these conventions and stuff. It's all people that are in their 30s and 40s. I mean, well, you know, it spans all ages, but you know.
The friends of mine that I know, the guys from Schadenfreude, others that are really into it, they've been into it. Like, they grew up with it. They loved DC Comics when they were kids and things like that. So they understand, they're loving that concept. For me, as a Johnny-come-lately, to absorb it in the last 3 years, you know, I have questions.
Yeah.
She's on an island that nobody knows about. Where does she get her superpowers from? Her bracelets? Huh? Was this in World War I? But it's 21st century technology, huh? It's that kind of thing.
Well, I appreciate that you have that. You know, you think about that kind of stuff, but you'll still go see it. Yeah. You know, to check it out and enjoy most of the.
Hey, I got. Where else am I going to get my $35 popcorn? Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, coming up a little bit later in the hour, Usman Ali will join us, talk about his time in Chicago theater. He's now got a recurring role on the HBO show Veep, as well as Nobody's on TV Land. Series of events, right? That show on Netflix, he's got a recurring role on that. So we'll talk with Usman Ali coming up here after the 9:30 news. Also tonight, we'll play Never Have I Ever in the 10 o'clock hour, 312-981-7200. Well, tomorrow is a long day for my next guest. Singer-songwriter Jennifer Hall has been with us a couple times here on The Download. She was in here performing from her last album. It was Make It Out Alive. This weekend, though, she will be performing at the Metro with the annual Hot Stove Cool Music Concert, thrown by Cubs Charities, featuring Theo Epstein, MLB.com's Peter Gammons, Len Casper, Eddie Vedder's done it in the past. It's the 6th annual Hot Stove Cool Music, and Jennifer will be performing with the Hot Stove All-Stars. That's tomorrow night. But before we get to that show, Jennifer will be performing around, I don't know, 1:10-ish? somewhere right in there at Wrigley Field. She's singing the national anthem tomorrow before the Cubs-Cards game. Jennifer is also performing at Shuba's on the 15th, and she's back on The Download tonight. But before we get to the interview, let's hear some live music. Here's a new track called In the Water, Jennifer Hall, accompanied by Noam Wallenberg. Take it away, guys.
From the deep, rising up from the ledge, blood sheets never returning to red. All I see are the reasons ahead. From the water, tongues rejoice at the promise of love. Despite voices that call out to give up, climb the top just to fill your cup. From the water, heart wide spilling, drowning out what has been before. Trenches fill lane in the water. In the water, deep in the water.
to offer? What do you long for deep in the water? Silver speaking loud like never before. But what we seek is out of reach from its thorns. Cause final needs never remember the score. I'm in the water. Heart wide spelling. Drawn out what has been before. Trenches fill lane. Prophecy fiddle. Floating out, flowing in. Then the impossible starts. The imposter of hearts. Oh, clipping heels to form a wind. Feet to form the plunge. I'm deep in the water. In the water. Deep in the water. Holding softer than a thought stir. Deep in the water. In the water.
Look at that. Jennifer Hall, Noam Wallenberg in studio tonight. Jennifer, of course, like we said, she's going to be at the Hot Stove Cool Music performance tomorrow night, Cubs charity show at Metro, sixth annual. Also going to be doing the national anthem at the Cubs card game tomorrow, right before the game starts at 1:20, of course. Great to see you again. Amazing performance,
so
you guys.
Nice to see
so
you.
Good
Thank
to have
you
so here.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, so let's talk about this. I mean, that's a brand new song. I mean, you guys are working on new music. Talk about that process. Is that something that we're going to hear soon?
Yes, which is so exciting. We, worked really hard on the last record and toured like crazy, mm-hmm. just trying to get it out to as many cities as possible and just trying to, tour with that record as much as we could. And now's the time to, get creative again and really hunker down and get some new music.
As musicians, do you do well under that kind of pressure where you set up a time and say, this is creative time, this is touring time?
We're tired. We're sleepy.
It's hard to do that, right? I mean, it's hard to find inspiration when it's like, this is the regimented time to do so.
Yeah. Well, it's a muscle. Like, you have to work it out. You know, inspiration doesn't just come. It's like you try to make music at a specific time a bunch, and then eventually it starts coming at that time.
Yeah, and I think there are things that we know that we can do to sort of foster creativity. We don't set up writing sessions at 8 a.m. because that's not a functional time for either of us. Time of day, even if it sounds a little hokey or corny, kind of dimming the lights a little, for me at least, sort of getting yourself in that creative, vibey place.
That's important for a lot of artists and the idea of setting the right tone.
Absolutely.
Cinnamon candles.
He's joking.
That's the key.
He's
not joking.
Favorite.
He's right on. Nailed it.
That's a smell that you smell in the studio right now, right?
Mm-hmm. We brought them with
cinnamon.
Us?
Yeah.
That's where success hinges.
There are 85 cinnamon candles in studio right now. No.
Not a fire hazard at all.
No, not at all. But, I mean, listening to the song, I mean, when you're performing new music and you put so much passion into it and you can hear it in your voice,
You know, how when you're actually performing for the first time, you're starting to get it out there. I mean, is there limitations to it? Do you, what's the challenge in performing new music, especially full on? Like, you just performed it full on, but are there points when you're like, you sort of pull back a little bit because you're not as confident with the new stuff?
Yeah. Well, I think the approach going forward, for me, what I'm going to try to do my best of is to make sure that I'm sort of past that hunch, at least from the singer's perspective, past that point of sort of being uncertain, and try to really know my way around the song before getting out there. I don't think I was always great at that before, and we would kind of jump in and perform something because we were excited that we had this thing. But I think it's, you know, you have to get acquainted with it.
Do you learn from the performances? I mean, before you put something down, and I mean, as you just did that song, I mean, you're going to think about it, you're going to listen back and go, this is where we're, how we're going to tweak it, that kind of stuff?
Until you're in front of people, you don't realize whether it's working or not. Not even from people's reaction. Like, sometimes if you, like, while we're recording, as soon as we might play it for friends of ours, and as soon as we play it in front of someone else, as it's playing, we're like, oh, that chorus is wrong. And, like, all these things come to light because of the just having another person hear it before they even say anything. You feel all these things that you don't feel when you just listen.
Well, that's the beauty of performing on the radio, right?
We should mention that this is also the first time that song's been performed, recorded.
Oh, really?
There you go. Well, yeah, this is the first. Well, if anyone put their cassette in,
it's very special.
This is the first recording of that.
Singer-songwriter Jennifer Hall, also Noam Wallenberg in studio tonight. We're going to continue the conversation. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about your big day tomorrow. I mean, not only doing the show at night at Metro, but performing the national anthem at the Cubs-Cardinals game at Wrigley Field tomorrow. Jennifer Hall in studio. Stay with us. Back in studio here, 720 WGN, The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Jennifer Hall in studio with me. Noam Wallenberg, of course, accompanying the live music. We'll continue in just a moment. We'll continue our conversation before we do that. Jennifer Hall, tomorrow, a huge day. She's going to be playing at the Hot Stove Cool Music charity event, the sixth annual at the Metro tomorrow night. Everyone loves that show. That's the show that Theo Epstein gets the guitar out. Guy from Buffalo Tom gets up there.
Yes.
Someone...
Everybody,
the guys from Tributosaurus. So what are you doing in that show?
Matt is going to be awesome. So you just, you know, hold on to your pants on that one. We rehearsed today. It sounds just wonderful. So I am backing up Matt
Spiegel. Spiegel's great.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Tributosaurus is, if you have not seen that band do their thing at Martyrs or wherever throughout the years, you're missing out, but go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Backing up Matt, backing up the all-star team from Boston, because this is an event that takes place in two cities every year, obviously, in Boston and in Chicago. And then I'm singing with a few local musicians. We call ourselves the Farm Team, and we are doing... Tanya Tucker, right? Is that how you...
Yeah, Tanya Tucker. Tanya, but I don't know. It's not my area.
James Taylor, the Eagles, some really great songs.
Okay.
Yeah. And so Nora O'Connor Jean, Kelly Hogan.
Yeah, right.
They sound incredible. Frida Love Smith from...
the Blake Babies,
Yes. Yeah. So just to name a few. Doug from Expo 76. Just a wonderful gang. So that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, obviously there to raise money for the foundation to be named later, which is Theo's foundation. And how cool is it that we get to do this hot stove show after the Cubs just won the World Series? That's incredible.
Yeah, right? I thought you were going to say how cool it is to do this show after you sing the national anthem at the Cubs-Cardinals game. But let's talk about
that.
As well. So you're doing that tomorrow. Of course, the Cubs and Cardinals kick off tomorrow with a day game. What's your experience with that song and the idea of singing it at ball games like that?
Yeah. Oh, man. Can I tell you the funniest thing?
Have you sung it before?
Yes. Can I tell you the funniest thing? Merging both of your questions/responses just now. Do you want to get hear something totally wild? The very first time I ever performed the anthem was on WGN. I swear there's got to be footage somewhere. I must have been 11 or 12 or 13. No joke. It was for a contest. and I won the slot or a slot to sing the anthem for the Schaumburg Flyers years ago on WGN.
There you go.
How funny is that? And I've done the song many, many times for the Flyers and the Bandits, local teams. And then I've done it at Soldier Field, Wrigley Field a few times now, the Sox Stadium. So it's, you know, it is really such an
What's the secret to singing that
to
song?
It,
I mean, for you, since you've been doing it since you were 11 years old, yeah, what is the secret? What makes the national anthem what makes a good performance of that song?
Well, I don't know if I would elect myself as
You have to have a small body.
Yeah.
You have to be a very small person, petite, and
check.
Then just sing as loud as
check.
You can.
And sing
oh,
as
and
loud
check.
As you can, right?
Small, loud. Got it. I don't know if I'm necessarily the official judge to say what makes a good anthem, but what I like to do or what I try to do is just make it about the song, you know, for what that's worth. And I usually don't stylize it too much, just to sort of respect, you know, the reverence of the song, because it's a special song. And be very aware of the, if you ever find yourself singing in a stadium, be aware of the, what is it, the... The delay.
There's
the first
a delay,
time I,
right?
Yeah, the first
oh,
time I was at Wrigley,
that.
I was like, oh, say, can't, oh, say. And I was like, oh, no, this is, I forgot
it's
about
like
this.
4 seconds
it's
or something.
Many,
like that.
It's many, yeah, it's
Did
intense.
They tell you beforehand? Like,
no.
No, they just
no,
get
no.
in there.
They're just like, you go
oh,
do
wow.
it. You go do it now. But, no, I just, you know, try to think of the reverence.
Well,
it,
if you
I
have
suppose.
Tickets tomorrow at Wrigley Field, you can see Jennifer Hall. She'll be singing the national anthem before the Cubs-Cardinals. She's also going to be as part of the Hot Stove All-Stars at the Hot Stove Cool Music Show tomorrow night at Metro.
And there are some VIP tickets, I think, left for that.
All right, there you go, VIP. No big
if
deal.
If you're looking for an awesome
You're looking for a
night,
VIP experience.
Yeah.
There it is.
That's your, you know...
That's
your
bracket. Right.
Thank you. Your bracket. Right. You just come on by. You just come on by. I believe.
You believe.
I think they're VP.
And then you can also see Jennifer. She'll be performing at Shuba's coming up on the 15th. All right. So what are we going to hear? Let's hear one live song before we end here. What are we going to hear here?
Yeah, this is Waking Hour. This is a song that Noam and I wrote together.
All right.
And with our friend Ben.
Jennifer Hall, Noam Wallenberg in studio, live.
I wish for you a new beginning, a waking hour of almost silence, where you can gather what you're needing, make room for all that you are yearning. With buckets full of fickle warnings of fallen victims of that fire that chose those words so undeserving, tripped the ever-taking wire, tripped the ever-taking wire. I am asleep, but I'm awakened. For heavy rain, a simple morning. That screen door telling you I'm already crossing that Mississippi border. For the world, it looks so pale now, so different from outside the window. Its mouth is mine and I am speaking to give a little to the widows, to give a little to the widows.
that screen door telling you I'm already crossing that Mississippi border. That screen door telling you I'm already for the only heavy take moves along till it waits. That simple sight it breaks. My riches can't be counted in numbers, only in times I bet it all. But Georgia never knew my name though, and I am one that likes to be recalled. Be for heavy rain, a simple morning. That screen door telling you I'm already crossing that Mississippi border. That screen door telling you I'm already crossing that.
Amazing. Singer-songwriter Jennifer Hall, accompanied by Noam Wallenberg, in studio tonight. Some of Chicago's best, and they will be on display. Jennifer will be at the 6th annual Hot Stove Cool Music concert tomorrow night at Metro. She'll also be singing the national anthem at the Cubs-Cardinals game, and she'll be at Shuba's on June 15th. New music on the way as well, and you guys got to promise to come back when the new stuff comes out. You promise?
We promise.
All right, great to
We're
see you guys.
Candles.
Hey, candles. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a familiar face to Chicago theater audiences. Usman Ali spent a few years here in Chicago after college, performing in shows like Disgraced at American Theater Company, Metamorphoses at Looking Glass, and The Jungle Book at the Goodman. He's won an Obie, a Jeff, and even a Pulitzer Prize for his work in Disgraced. And now he's transitioned to Hollywood. He's got a recurring role in HBO's Veep as one of Selena Meyer's love interests, and he plays a studio executive on the new show Nobody on TV Land, executive produced by Melissa McCarthy, just to name a few of the credits. Ali is not just an actor, he's also a poet, and he joins us tonight on The Download. Usman Ali, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You know, it's funny because I was only able to mention a couple of the credits, both for your television and film career, but, you know, your theater career. Because after college, mm-hmm. you came to Chicago a couple of years back, and you really had a formidable career in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I did. I was really fortunate that, you know, I started off at Looking Glass as an intern, actually, an education intern, because after I received my master's degree, I came out to Chicago. So this was about December of 2006. And, you know, just the experience of working there and getting to see how a not-for-profit theater is run and meeting the people over there, it really is sort of where everything began for me. It gave me access to a lot of people. And I always tell people the funny story about how I got my start was that I went to general audition as a non-equity actor for Looking Glass and Steppenwolf. And, you know, I sat there waiting to be seen at this general for about, I think, 10 hours or so, to 10 hours. It was a long time, all morning, all afternoon. My turn was next. I didn't get to go in, but they said, hey, you know what? You can just come in and say hi to the casting directors. So I went in and Phil Smith recognized me. He was the casting director for Looking Glass at the time and recognized me as an intern of theirs. And he told Erica Daniels, who was the casting director at Steppenwolf, that, oh, this is Usman, and he's a really great actor. Well, Phil had never actually seen me perform. but it was a nice thing for him to say, because once he said that, Erica looked at my resume and said, oh, you know, I might have an audition for you. And she called me in about a week later to audition for a play called Tranquility Woods by Joel Drake Johnson. It was part of their garage theater show. Mm-hmm. And I got the role, and that sort of got the ball rolling for me, you know?
Some of the credits that I mentioned, I mean, The Jungle Book or Disgraced. I mean, Disgraced was such a huge hit here in Chicago, remounted as well. Talk about being involved in the work that you were here and how it formed you as an actor today, because Disgraced is one of those plays that continues to be one of the works that people remember here in Chicago, not just here, but wherever it's produced. Talk about that. Talk about being involved in not just the Chicago scene, but a play with such influence.
You know, I think it's something that being a Chicago actor, you have the opportunity to do that you might not find elsewhere in the country, which is to really start work on a new play and sort of from the ground up. You know, when I first got Disgraced and I met Ayad, it was sort of just an incomplete play that had a lot of interesting themes to it. And our production at American Theatre Company, we were able to just sit down and sort of grind it out, you know, figure out what works, what doesn't, and sort of build the play from what it was on the page to what you finally saw on the stage. And I know that the playwright, even after our production, continued to change it. But I think where we got it was really important and is sort of the basis of what the play is at the moment. So, yeah, you know, I think just those opportunities in Chicago where you could be in a rehearsal room and sit there with the playwright. I mean, there are times when I'd be sitting in a room with Tracy Letts and Anna Shapiro and, you know, these rather large names in the theater nationally. And to be able to just dissect their work in sort of like almost a much more egalitarian way than you'll find in film and television, yeah, where everyone has input and something to say. Those sorts of experiences, what they do for you as an actor is they allow you to think critically, you know, about the work and about the world we live in and what you bring to the table as an artist, you know? And that's not something that you always get an opportunity to do in other places. And Chicago is sort of this place, like an incubator almost for new plays, you know? And that experience is essential, I think. I always tell young actors that it's important to go somewhere where you can actually work, not necessarily become a star or anything like that, but just have opportunities to sit down and figure out what kind of artist you are. And I think that's a really crucial part of being an artist in Chicago.
Well, for you, I mean, you've had such a career, you know, not just on television, as we were talking about the theater, but also in poetry. When you came to Chicago and you left to move to New York, but also to work in Los Angeles, what kind of artist were you? I mean, what did Chicago bring out of you that still stays with you today?
I think the most important thing is to be prepared and to be ready to work. You know, Chicago certainly has this blue-collar mentality about it that not only exists in, like, you know, in the regular workforce, but in the arts as well, you know. And the idea that you should always honor the story you're telling. You know, everywhere I've gone, it's important for me to find out what the logic of the playwright is and what the logic of the character is. And whatever you can do, you have to figure out a way to make your character sympathetic to an audience. You know, I've had experiences where I've oftentimes played characters that were, you know, initially not so likable, or an audience might not feel sort of a kinship to, or characters who they do like, but suddenly does something terrible, as in Disgrace, where he, you know, physically assaults his wife. But I learned very early on here that, you know, you as an actor, you have to find out the logic of that character and find a way to get your audience on your side, you know. And a lot of that comes from knowing that the answers to everything that you're looking for as an artist, as an actor, almost everything you can find in a script, you know, in the writing itself. You don't have to work too hard on creating something that isn't there, you know?
Right.
So I think really I left here as an actor who put a lot of faith in writers and directors who were on the team with me, that, you know, to treat them with a level of respect, that they're coming from a place of knowledge and intelligence, and hopefully that they'll do the same for me. And that was something that I was lucky to have, was to be working with playwrights and directors on shows like The Labyrinths of Chad Deity, and who understood that I had something to offer. Yeah. You know?
Now I think of the roles, the two that I mentioned at the top in Hollywood, Veep, of course, you're hilarious in Veep, and it's quite a triangle that's been created. But also, you know, with Nobodies, I mean, you play a studio executive. Mm-hmm. You know, you've had the opportunity to jump into some pretty meaty roles in Hollywood. Did your time in Chicago prepare you for that? Because a lot of times actors come out of Chicago and they don't get the opportunities that you're getting just right off the bat.
I guess so. I think I left at a level of confidence, you know, in my ability. And I think that's a crucial part of when you come out to Hollywood where there's so many actors, and when you come out here and you're really competing with a lot of people, it's important to have a level of confidence in who you are as an artist and an actor. And I have to say that every time I speak to a casting director, I'll say 90% of the time in Los Angeles, when they have an awareness that I've come from Chicago, it's almost like they breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief, you know, that they're, okay, well, this is an actor who gets what we're doing here, who will show up on set and will know what you know, be ready to work, you know, have his lines down, which I have to say, it doesn't always happen in Los Angeles, you know, that actors show up on set with their lines prepared. You know, Chicago also has a great improv scene, and I wasn't necessarily involved in it, but I think some of that comfortability with improvising is part of the ethos of this city, and that's very helpful too when you're out there auditioning for certain roles. You know, with nobody's, my audition was pretty much like 10 to 15 minutes of just improvising with the three stars of the show and Melissa McCarthy in the room as well. So just having a comfort and confidence in who you are. I think some people come out to the city very young and they're not there yet. You know, they haven't developed. I really think it's important to make that move when you're a bit more mature. So, you know, I came out here probably at the age of 32 or 33 and to Los Angeles. And I certainly felt even older than that in terms of just my spirit. But I felt like I was ready to be here. You know, I think if I'd come out here in my early 20s, it might have, you know, chewed me up and spat me out.
We're talking with Usman Ali. He is an actor, a former Chicago theater actor who has recurring roles both on Veep on HBO and Nobody's on TV Land. Both of those shows are highly based in improv and are almost come from, and you've had some, you've also done Curb Your Enthusiasm, but the idea of using improv as well as the writing and scripted out, do you find that interesting for you as an actor who has done so much with the written word and even with your poetry that you've ended up on two comedies that really rely on improvisation?
I know, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I certainly, as an actor who went to school for acting and then so much time in the theater, you do sort of take the playwright's word as golden, right? You have to make sure, you know, there's not much room for changing things, you know, and a good actor is somebody who really honors the written word. But yeah, you know, to make that transition to these shows where so much of it is improvisational was interesting for me. It was certainly about shifting a gear, and so much of transitioning from the stage to the screen is about flexing a completely different muscle. You know, it's a different style of acting, and you just have to, sometimes the adjustment can be a little bit more difficult, but it's always helpful. In my case, I was very lucky that for both Veep and for Nobody's, you know, the environments that I was working on were incredibly collaborative and welcoming. You know, they went out of their way to make me feel important. You know, it's very easy sometimes in Hollywood to be on a show where, you know, you're a guest star recurring and they're like, well, who's this guy? He's not important because he's only here for a few episodes. You know what I mean? So I was fortunate that I was working in these two high caliber shows, but that they created an atmosphere where they made me feel valid and welcome and took my suggestions on board. And, you know, it can be nerve-wracking to make a suggestion sometimes to somebody like Julia Louis-Dreyfus or David Mandel, who's our executive producer, but they create an atmosphere where you can do that. And, you know, conversely, I'm also on this other show on Netflix called A Series of Unfortunate Events.
Of course.
And we're in our second season right now, but that show is very structured, you know, like these are the lines and this is how we have to get the lines out. And our showrunner, Barry Sonnenfeld is very much about, like, you know, get those lines out fast and with a certain rhythm to them. So that in some ways feels like theater again.
It's interesting, your career, because you have been somewhat of an activist to making sure that there's more diversity in Hollywood. That's something that I read a couple of times. But I mean, for you to be involved with the Netflix show, to Nobody's, I mean, you found a way to avoid the typecast as someone of Middle Eastern descent who automatically go into Hollywood. And we've talked to other actors on this show, have talked about, you know, all you can get cast as is is a terrorist or a villain. To find yourself in a position where not only can you advocate for diversity, but you're actually walking the walk in the way that the roles that you're playing aren't necessarily typecast roles that are usually reserved for people with brown skin.
You know, it's sort of an exhausting process because you have to, like you said, talk the talk and walk the walk. But I think what was important for me was very early on in my career, I sat down with my agents and I said, hey, these are the roles I know are going to be coming to me, and I'm happy to go over them on a case-by-case basis. But there's certain things I'm just not going to do, or I'll most likely not do, you know? And I think there's a lot of power for artists in saying no sometimes, you know? In my career on television and film, I think I've played a quote-unquote terrorist one time on a one television show, and it was at a time, and I never judge people who take these roles because you never know what the person's personal circumstances are, you know, at the time. And I was in a place where I was like, well, this is a gig that I need, you know, it will help me out financially, I need to do it. So I did it at one time, and I remember that when I was on set doing it, I felt awful. I felt like, how are my parents going to react to seeing me playing this role? I said to myself, this is the first and last time I'm going to do this. And I've had also the luxury of being able to fulfill that promise to myself, you know, because I've been going in for these sorts of roles that are not ethnic specific, quote unquote. I do think there is a change also happening in mainstream Hollywood where roles are opening up to people of color. It's incremental at times, you know, but it's happening. And I think the more you can, more opportunities that are available, the more we can actually show producers and audiences that there is room for, you know, representation and diversity on the screen. And sometimes it just takes that one gig. You know, the first time I was on Veep, that opened up the doors to so many comedies. It was mm-hmm. like that happened. And suddenly, from being an actor who never got seen for comedies, I was always going in for drama. I did one episode of Veep, and then all of a sudden, a series of unfortunate events came in, and Nobody's came in, and then the Curb Your Enthusiasm. So there's... It's interesting how sometimes it just takes one of those things to open up the eyes of the people who are making the decisions. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. Usman Ali is my guest tonight, an actor who spent some time here in the Chicago theater scene. He's got recurring roles in HBO's Veep, as well as Nobody's on TV Land and A Series of Unfortunate Events, the Netflix series. Usman Ali, thank you so much for taking some time out. And when you get back through town, we'd love to have you in studio. Thanks for joining us tonight. Congrats on your career,
too. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's always great to talk to people back home.
If I were directing that show, I'd have Billy Joel dress like Elton John and Elton John's guy dress like Billy Joel just to throw people off. Total paradigm shift. You'd be like, what is happening? When the guy who looks like Elton John goes, oh, for the longest time. You're like, what? How did he do that with those star glasses? I might go out and see that show. I think they've gotten around to something. The idea of putting Elton John and Billy Joel together.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like going to Soldier Field and Wrigley Field at the same time. Is Elton John tour anymore? I guess he does. I just feel like Billy Joel's always at Wrigley. But you don't hear too much about Elton John coming through.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure he does. I know, didn't he? I think he fell ill a while back.
Did he?
Yeah.
I don't know. I lose track of my aging piano men.
Remember my buddy, the Catman, was working, and he was like, yeah, meet me up at Goose Island in Wrigleyville. I had to do some work over there. And I'm like, all right, that sounds good. Like, so left after work, got up there, and it was like super crowded on the train. I'm like, what's going on? And it was a Billy Joel, Elton John show at Wrigley.
Oh, they were together?
Yeah, playing together. Oh. This is like 10 years ago.
Okay.
But I was like, he knew that this was happening and wanted to just like listen to Billy Joel but not pay, you know.
He's like, meet me over at Sports Corner.
Well, yeah, he didn't say. He's like, hey, yeah, Billy Joel and Elton John are playing at Wrigley Field. Do you want to come go to the neighborhood and like, you know?
He didn't say that.
No, he just said like, meet me at Goose Island. I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah,
I'll just roll
on my
right
way
in
home.
There.
Yeah. And then, sure enough, he was like, okay, I don't think I even, like, got into Goose Island. He's like, we got to go. And then we're, like, standing outside left field.
Wow. Yeah.
Listening to Candle in the Wind.
I always think of the Billy Joel is it Step Brothers or Horatio Sanz is on stage at the Catalina Wine Mixer? And they're only 80s Billy Joel. And Matt Walsh is like, play piano. And he's like, hey, man, I said only 80s Billy Joel. That's such a good man. Two Chicago guys. Come on. They're like,
for the longest time. That's so good. Yeah, that good having Usman Ali on. He's great on Veep. He kind of plays the intermediary. He was on last season, this season. He takes, uh-huh, takes a little romantic turn. You know, nothing like a yacht champagne party to do that. We were just talking about it. I mean, Veep continues to be one of the best shows on television. I watched it, and I am not just amazed at the great performances. Dreyfuss is amazing.
Uh-huh.
And all of the cast from Chicago, everybody, and people we've had on the show. I mean, Jonah Ryan is boss. But the writing is just, it just continues. And we're thinking about this because both of us, Pete and I, are both on a Master of None kick, Aziz Ansari's show, which is unreal. One of the most creative, talented shows on television right now on Netflix. And then we were thinking, I guess Atlanta with Donald Glover, that still counts as this year, I think. Maybe it was last year. So you're like, what is the best show on television? You know, if you're at an Emmys and Transparent, you're just saying Transparent's got everyone loves that, the new season, best it's been. Just think about the Emmys coming up. There are going to be a lot of great shows in those categories. Comedy. It's great. I don't know. If you had to say Master of None or Atlanta, what would you say?
I think right now I would say Master of None only because I've just watched it. But I remember when I watched Atlanta, I was like, this is the best show. There's nothing better.
Right.
Donald Glover's a genius.
Do you think that Master of None's better than Veep?
It's a different show.
Yeah. I think Master of None could be like the Chance the Rapper of the Emmys this year. I think it could just sweep everything and be surprised and everyone would be okay with it. You know, it's you know, streaming, obviously, Netflix. And it won last year, I think, for best writing, but I don't think, or best new show. I forgot what it was, but I think for best comedy,
yeah,
I think it could be the chance of it could take a chance. The rapper,
I just like I hate when like I like seeing. Usually, it takes about a year or two for the whatever the awards to kind of catch up. When you think, oh, yeah, like you know, Master of None could have won. Like, I guess they won a little bit last year. Right. Like Veep would win. But yeah, it's like they still have like Modern Family winning things. Frasier would win for like 12 years in
Big
a row.
Big Bang Theory's gonna
like,
win up there. Yeah,
yeah, like he get you know like oh Jim Parsons nominated. Oh, that's shocking. Because he can say like long scientific words. I mean, Jim Parsons is fine, and you know I'm sure Big Bang Theory is a fine show. But
never have I ever watched Big Bang Theory.
Not really.
I've watched snippets, and I've always kind of walked away from it. The other one, too, that I don't think I've watched a whole episode of Two and a Half Men in my time. Those are the CBS shows I missed. I missed that kind of that genre.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to play Never Have I Ever coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour, 312-981-7200, one of my favorite segments, new segments on the show, because I get to know more about Download Nation and also about what you haven't done. Like Mary's always the best. Last week she said, never have I ever had an outside mailbox. Or when was the other way around? Maybe one of the other. Yeah, it was that. And then the other was, a freestanding mailbox. The other was automatic doors or windows to my car. It's amazing. I feel like there's many more to come tonight. 312-981-7200. The best one gets a pizza. All right. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. We are playing Never Have I Ever, 312-981-7200. The phone number, you can text, you can call in, you can tell us what you've never done. It's a pretty simple concept, right? 312-981-7200. We are giving away a pizza tonight to the one that is the most revealing, explorative, opening. I forgot which one we did last week, but I think the idea was we felt like it meant a lot to say never have I ever done this.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of great ones on the show. There's no doubt about it. I love it. Never have I ever seen Star Wars is one of the big ones. It's always never have I ever gone through the drive-through fast food.
Oh yeah,
that was one. I was like, wow,
There was one that never had potato salad. I enjoyed that one.
That's so hard. I think I ate a full thing of potato salad on Monday.
Oh, man, I love potato salad.
Yeah, it was so good, right? Oh, so good.
My wife gets so mad at me when I just, like, when we go grocery shopping, I just look longingly at all the different potato salads. I'm saying, come on.
It's like 35 minutes in the potato. There should be a boutique store, right, in Chicago. It's just potato salad. You know, they have that stuff for, like, macaroni and cheese. Remember that was a fad where it's like, it's only macaroni and cheese. It's only baked potatoes.
Yeah, they have, there's a new shop up in Rogers Park, macaroni and cheese shop.
See? You should do, we should do, that's a different segment. Never have I ever been in a potato salad boutique. All right, we're getting some good stuff. Let's get to it tonight. I'll start us off. Actually, let's go to the text. I've got Scott says, 920, Scott says, never have I ever seen a James Bond movie. Wow. I can understand that. That's a genre. And to be honest, I think I've probably seen a few, but not too long ago, about 2 years ago, I remember I was out at a friend's house, Fort Collins, Colorado, and there was a James Bond marathon on, and we had to watch like four of them in a row. So I saw like a bunch of Daniel Craig, is that his name? Daniel Craig, James Bond movies that I missed. So I've caught up, but I'm with you completely on the idea. Never have I ever seen a James Bond movie. Let's go to Joe. Joe, give us a never have I ever.
Never been to Michigan. Lived in Illinois for about 30 years, and I've never been to Michigan.
That's crazy. Because it's not that far. It's like 20, I mean, really, from the south side of Chicago, it's what, like 25 minutes, 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's just a short swim across the lake.
Joe, I feel like next time I go visit my, I've got family up in St. Joe's area, I'll take you with me. Because it's,
all right.
Because I got to say, man, I had not done a lot of the sort of trip up the Michigan coastline on the Lake Michigan side. And I did it not too long ago for my cousin's wedding. I was like, what is this? It was like California. It was amazing. It blows your mind that it's the only place in the Midwest where there's terrain like that. It's really cool.
My wife and I have been planning a trip going up the coast of Michigan for 2 or 3 years now. We just haven't been able to get away to do it.
Do it this week.
We are absolutely dying to.
Go to Traverse City.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Definitely.
All right, Joe. Thank you.
I think last year, maybe around Memorial Day or one of the holidays, we had a debate. What do we like more, Michigan or Wisconsin? I think last year, you may have been a Wisconsin person. Are you changing over to
I love Wisconsin. I mean, there's nothing about it. But I do have a never have I ever. Here's a good one for you. Never have I ever been to Door County. So as Joe tells us about never been to Michigan, I have not been to Door County.
Hmm.
I've been to areas around it. I mean, going up north past Door County, like when you're going to almost like Lake Superior type stuff. But I'd never been to Door County. And I've been looking into it like, well, this would be a fun thing to do, like to go up there. And it's just so intimidating. It's intimidating because it's like the Cape Cod of the Midwest. And you're like, well, I probably needed to book this like 2.5 years ago. You know what I mean? Like get that vibe.
I'm sure it's.
But then what else are you going to go? I'm not going to go up there in November. Right?
We go to a place in Michigan every February.
Okay.
Because it's cheap skiing, and nobody else is. Yeah, it's skiing, like, it's nice to get away.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, the room that we stay in is like $120. And then we try to get to the same room now. It's like $425. So, sure, we're on Lake Michigan in February, but.
When I went up the highway on all the way up to, I forgot what town he got married in, my cousin, but it was way up there. And we went all the way up the coast. It was amazing. I really, really dug the Michigan side. And the Wisconsin side too, because we had what's his name, Rich Cohen on, talking about his piece in the New York Times about doing that trip around Lake Michigan.
And
he talked about both sides, you know, Wisconsin and Michigan.
And now you have the fascination with the Manitowoc, where the murder was, making a murder.
Oh yeah, you go up there.
Yeah, check it out.
Good. We went up to, I had to ask my dad where we went as a kid. It wasn't Door County, but it was a lake. And I'll have to look it up, but it had muskie. Like, it was one of those, like,
the Eagle just, River?
Eagle River, isn't Eagle River where they do shotgun eddies and the river rafting?
I just remember, like, a family that, like, I grew up with. They went fishing to Eagle River, and, like, every shirt the dad had was about a muskie, catching muskie.
There's a river, and I forgot the name of it. Someone will probably tell us, but it might be Eagle River that they do whitewater rafting on. And you go to shotgun eddies, and that's where you get the raft and everything and get in the – I've done that. And I've gone – I can't remember the other town, but it was on a lake, and I just remember that my mom was – we were fishing in a boat, and the kept getting snagged at the bottom, you know, and it was just weeds and stuff. And my we were in this little boat, and my mom was – the fishing rod went again, and my dad goes, you might have something. And this huge northern pike jumps out of the water like it was river monsters. It was awesome. Huge-ass teeth. Whole bit, man. Like, I was like freaked out, and we were just like in a little boat with a little motor, and we had to take that thing back, you know, because it was, I guess that's what you do, you take it back and eat it. And but it was a total experience. I looked at that fish for like the whole time we were there, for like the 3 days. I just stared on the pier at this fish that was in a net. Not good. 312-981-7200. 847 says, I've never used an ATM. Wow. He's still going to the teller. Hey, that's good, though. You're kind of like Donald Trump. You're keeping an industry alive. You know, the bank teller industry is alive thanks to you not using an ATM. 331 says, never have I ever seen an ocean. Woo, my mother-in-law had the same thing, and then that was remedied. We went to California. 872 says, never have I ever dressed up in cosplay. Yeah, I don't think, there's probably a lot of us out there that haven't done that. 319 says, never have I ever gone to an amusement park. Well, that's a tough one because that's an experience that you should see in your lifetime and then not go back. Right? Like, I feel like that's like, it's so funny. Like, I've never been to Great America. Well, imagine a roller coaster that defies gravity for 30 seconds. And imagine you got to wait in line for like 2 hours to experience it. And then imagine Bugs Bunny in cosplay is around there handing out flyers or something like that. I just nailed it. That's Great America. And there's like $6 slices of pizza and Johnny Rockets. Right? Nailed it. All right. We're playing I Never. Never have I ever. 312-981-7200. The lines are jacked. I'm sure all to tell me about what I'm not remembering about Wisconsin and Michigan. But we'll get back to Never Have I Ever here on the download. Stay with us. And I never, never have I ever, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Eric. Eric, what have you never done, Eric?
Hi, I've never have I ever seen an episode of Friends or Seinfeld.
Ooh, missed the must-see TV, huh?
Yeah, just a little.
Why? While everybody in your life was going, you've got to see Friends, what were you doing to avoid it?
Just being a rebel and just doing other things not around TV. I mean, I might have heard of it, but yeah. I've never seen an episode.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I was the contrarian in the room whenever all of my college friends would be like, Friends is the greatest, Ross and Rachel. I'd be like, this show. But Seinfeld, that's a great show. You should watch Seinfeld. If you're interested in television at all, those episodes, which are on all the time, they still hold up. They're really, really good.
There's nothing worse than, you know, coming home and it's like 11 o'clock and all you want is a Seinfeld on like the U and you get a King of Queens, you know, like what, like that you're looking for that old, you know, you don't want to go through, you know, like Netflix or DVD, you know, you just want it to be on like the U or WPWR. And then you look and there's, you know, the David Spade show with Putty, you know, it's like,
I love how the pessimistic, you're like, nothing ever works. All I wanted was a Seinfeld. Those aren't on demand either. Those are hard to find. 708 says, I can never understand why anyone laughs so hard at Seinfeld or Friends. Okay, I'm going to, I'm with you on half of that equation. They are not the same show. Friends and Seinfeld may have been on, were they on the same night? Thursday nights?
Yeah.
They're nothing like each other.
I mean, maybe you didn't watch Thursday nights, but to say Friends and Seinfeld in the same category, they're not.
No, different shows.
They're very different. Friends was a sitcom with, you know, laugh tracks, and they had laugh track on Seinfeld as well. But Seinfeld did something that was entirely new for the time and what they were doing. So I would say no.
I was the same way, though, with, like, I hated for, I didn't hate it. I just, like, watching, I'm like, you watch Seinfeld and you're like, this show is just, the quality is just so much better. But then I remember like listening to Howard Stern one morning and he was talking about how great Friends was. And I'm like, let me try it. And then I don't know, like something clicked where it just hooked me. And now,
I mean, we've had David Schwimmer on and, you know, there are some great comedy happening in Friends, definitely. But I don't know, man, that's a danger of its own hype. There's so much hype around that. Seinfeld had hype too, but Larry David came through.
Every Thanksgiving, you know, those Friends were known for doing a Thanksgiving episode every year, and now I will have to watch 10 Thanksgiving episodes of Friends every on Thanksgiving or the Wednesday before, and it drives my family crazy.
630 says, never have I ever owned an automatic transmission since my first car in 1972. Where'd it go? I lost it, darn it. Hold on. A 1972 Chevy Vega. Ooh. It was a Vega. That's before my time. They say they only bought that for $400 when they got their first post-college job. Gave it away after 4 months. 262 says, never have I ever filled my gas tank. Wow. That's a strategy. That's not about poverty. That's strategy. I mean, they're like a half here, going a little three quarters here, turn it around. I mean, how do you never fill your gas tank?
Or do they personally do not get out of the car? Do they still have full service? Go to full service?
Oh, maybe it's more about the labor of doing it. 630 says, never have I ever used the outdoor grill. I'm a 53-year-old female. No interest in starting now, but I love when my husband barbecues. All right, that makes sense. 630 says, I've lived in Chicago for all 23 years of my life. But never have I ever been to a Hawks game, Bulls game, Bears game. Been to a Cubs and Sox, though. Those are three things you should do.
Uh-huh.
And they're easy to do. The United Center is a nice place. It's very easy to get in and out of there. Soldier Field, a little bit tougher. Those games, I mean, I think the NFL experience on a Sunday with kind of moseying in like a herd of fans. You know, and you hear the bucket boys in the back, and it's cold, and you all get close to the door, and you got to go through. There's something very unique about that experience. And then the ultimate disappointment of being a fan and then being like, what? Oh, come on! I even saw that linebacker. And then you have to walk like 6 miles back to get to civilization when you're done with that game. That's the experience of watching a Bears game. There's beer, too. 224 says, Door County is very yuppie. Lovely to look at, but you might as well be in the North Shore of Chicago.
All right. Somebody called and said, was it Hayward, Wisconsin that you were? It was like, it's the musky capital of the...
Oh, really? All I remember about it, and I'll find out, that doesn't sound right. It was, is Boulder Junction? Is that a Wisconsin? I feel like that would be the right town. You would go downtown, like to downtown to the actual main street. There was only one street, and they would have coolers of the catch, so you would go outside the main general store, and there would be a cooler with like a huge muskie in it with a, like a tape measured on how long it was and things like that. So like that was part of the experience. I don't know. This Boulder Junction sounds right. Let's go to Joy. How you doing, Joy?
Hey, I'm well. Thank you. Okay. Never have I ever had a singing telegram done to me.
Ooh, me neither. What is that?
I've done many for people. I've never had one. Never, ever have I met you in person, just on the radio.
Right.
So, and I figured out where you went as a kid.
Where?
You went sailing on Lake Winnipesaukee. What
good.
About Bob?
Yeah, right. I got it. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah,
that's
I was
good,
thinking
Joy.
It sounded like that part. Take care.
Good, thank you. So you're setting that up. That's good. Never have I ever had bull testicles, which are very popular in Texas. I've never had Rocky Mountain oysters as well. 815, never have I ever been on a snowmobile. That's a good one. I feel like I have been on a snowmobile, but because I grew up in Wonder Lake, but it's not something I've done in decades. So there's that. Okay. Jim's got Wisconsin info. Jim, what do you got for me, Jim?
Hey, Justin. You were right. It's Boulder Junction.
Yeah, right.
And the store is called the Northern Highlands. It's got everything. Your fishing tackle.
Yeah, and it's got a cooler's out in front, right?
Yep. Yeah, well, it's actually along the side. But, yeah, and then whatever people caught in the lakes in the area, they get to bring them in there.
That's so great. And I remember
and Hayward.
Go ahead. What's Hayward? Sorry. No, go ahead.
Yeah, Hayward is the that's the big fish that you walk up and you can go into. They charge you like, you know, $10 to go into this fish and take a picture.
Oh, okay.
It's a huge fish. That's what I thought you were talking about at first.
You know, I do remember, I think it was a restaurant or a bar, that in the back they had a crazy museum that had like a bunch of taxidermy, like a bunch of like a bear and then a cougar and all this kind of stuff. And it was in the back of a restaurant and on the way or in that town, Boulder Junction.
Yeah, I don't remember one in there, but there's a couple of those smaller lakes have restaurants like that. And yeah, you walk in and my wife's niece just went crazy. She walked in and she turned around and walked right out because she's this big PETA person, you know, and all these animals on the wall. Right.
Jim, how far is Boulder Junction from Chicago?
Well, it's 300 miles from Milwaukee to Boulder Junction.
Okay.
So add another, I had a wedding in downtown Chicago on Michigan, and we drove up to Phillips, Wisconsin, which is farther northwest, and that was 700 miles. So that's what you're probably looking about 700 miles. Sorry, Justin. 300 plus 200, 7 hours. That's what I was getting at.
Right.
Yeah, so it's about 500 miles, and it's about 7 hours.
That's about right. All right, thanks, Jim. Thanks for the info.
Hey, enjoy your show.
Thank you, buddy. I love that. Carla, you got an update for me, too. What did I get wrong?
Hi. No, you didn't get anything wrong. Your Shotgun Eddies?
Yeah, right. Shotgun Eddies.
That's on the Wolf River.
Wolf River, right. That's the best.
And,
that's the best.
We actually took our son, who is now 44 years old, when he was three years old, and took that raft.
Wow.
I recognize some of the pictures. I looked. We did fine. We were all scared. He was probably, I don't know, he thought he was going to die, of course. He's 3 years old, and he's telling him we're going to die. But it was really fun, and that is a great spot.
Oh, there's two. If I remember correctly, and I might do it this summer, go back up there, because I have a nine-year-old son. I think he would like it. But there were two. There was like a shorter one that you could do, and then there was a longer one that ended with the big waterfall that was like the huge waterfall you go over and you would crash. Essentially, there's like one that was like a shorter, like a three-hour or six-hour trip kind of thing.
I'm not sure, but I know that if you went around a turn all of a sudden, and then you went down, that was the scary part.
Yeah, right.
But it was pretty low water when we went. I know people who have gone when it's been high water. I mean, it can be scary.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll see what the water level is. All right, Carla, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thanks for telling me about that.
We love Wisconsin too.
good
from Rockford. We're from Rockford.
All right, good. Thanks, Carla. Appreciate that. All right, we're playing I Never, and also correcting me on my Wisconsin memories, my childhood memories, or at least give me great info. Both of them give me great info. It's stuff that I didn't remember. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get Rob's news. Then we'll come back and do the second half of I Never. Got a ton of people on the line. 312-981-7200. I also got some great texts. We'll get to it. Stay with us. Playing Never Have I Ever tonight on Download. Here on 720 WGN, I'm Justin Kaufman. The best part, as I mentioned, I've never been to Door County, and you forget about the reach of WGN. You know, you sit down here in Michigan Avenue Studio and getting texts in from people all around that area. A restaurant, this is the restaurant in Sister Bay where goats eat grass on the roof. Your son would love it. Right? And someone else was saying, named all the places you can go in Door County.
Let's do it.
I'll tag along with your family.
Hey, I love it. Let's do a remote. Let's do a week up there.
Yes.
Right? Wouldn't that be great? Like August? I would do it in a heartbeat. We do like fish boils and interview the goats up on who eat the grass. All sorts of stuff we could do. I hope that I would like that as I think about the future of the download. I definitely would like to do that, like remotes where we're in places that are in our listening area that we could do like more than one show, you know, like not just a Hometown Voices, which I love, but do like three or four in a row. And then the second would be to broadcast live at 16-inch softball games.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like a like the rec league, you know, and just be the show that always every Tuesday is out at the, you know, at the Grant Park Diamonds.
I love that.
Isn't that really great?
Yeah.
I want to do it where we're actually in the game. Like, oh, Pete, take the mic. I gotta go bat. 734 says, never have I ever had a bite of fish or seafood. Wow. You're missing out. It's good stuff. There's probably an allergy involved in that, I would assume. 630 says, never have I ever been more stressed out than when my mother invited my eighth grade teacher, a Catholic nun, to Sunday brunch at our house. Very specific. I found out a week before and completely panicked.
I remember I went to Catholic school, and the priest for the church was a family friend. So he'd be, you know, he'd be off into dinner and what have you. So, he'd be out to dinner like on a Thursday. And then Friday, you had to go to confession to him.
Ah, you're like, I didn't eat all my broccoli.
Father Dan.
Hey, Father Dan.
I was bad to my parents.
Don't tell them. 773 says, never have I ever been camping. Not missing anything. I'm like, 708, another never have I used an ATM. Wow. 727 says, yes, shotgun eddies and Peshtigo River for rafting. I'm saying we could do two shows at Shotgun Eddies and then finish out three shows Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Door County, Wisconsin kind of thing, yeah. Get the house on the rock. Is that in Wisconsin? That too. Go to Janesville, hang out with Paul Ryan. We'll do that to start. Then we'll head over. I'm a 49-year-old male. This is 262. 49-year-old male. I never have I ever had bourbon or seen a Harry Potter movie.
You're trying both at the same time.
That sounds like a Friday night to me. 630. Never have I ever had an egg. I never had fish. I've never had mayonnaise for sure. I've never had mashed potatoes or baked potato. I've never had skim milk. And I've never had yogurt.
God, what's this guy eat? Glass?
He didn't put that on there, so I think so. He's like, I've had tons of glass. I love glass.
Wow.
Art. Wow. I'm not missing anything. There you go. 847, Door County is so awesome, beautiful, so much to see. Fish bowls, Washington Island, Fish Creek. Egg Harbor, Sister Bay, Bailey's Harbor, which is a GN advertiser. I've been there at least five times. There you go. See? Never, this is Aaron, 630. Never have I ever played Monopoly. Wow.
Well, that's a great one.
That's a great one. Gosh, man. That I remember one time I had a total prescient future look at how government was going to work in 2017 from a game of Monopoly I played with my mom, my grandma, my dad when I was in the 80s. I think it was the 89 season that the Cubs were going to – I remember this. And we got to the point of Monopoly where you have to barter and trade, you know, where you go, okay, I'll give you this one for this one. And my mom – and it's classic. It made my dad so mad. My mom was like, you know what? If we can't get what we want, we'll just hang tight. We're not going to barter. We're fine where we're at.
Shutting it down?
Shut the whole game down. And my dad's like, "That you can't. The game can't move forward if you don't trade." And she's like, "We're fine. We just won't trade." And I was like, at the time, my dad just couldn't figure it out. And I'm like, now it's 2017. I'm like, wow, that's Springfield.
Yeah.
They're doing what my mom and grandma as a team were doing to my dad in Monopoly back in 1989. Like, the game, you have to, you know, because they, you know, like, my dad had two purples and,
Maybe she had some greens.
Yeah.
And they couldn't, they just couldn't figure it out what was a good trade, and they just decided, no, we're not going to. So the game kind of was boring from that point, you know, like you can't build hotels. You can't do anything. And my dad always to this day, he even talks about, he's like, that's the whole point of the game. If you don't do that, that's the, there's no game. It was a classic John Boehner. We call it a Boehner moment 20 years before Boehner. 30 years. Jeez. There you go. I like that one, though. Someone said, cruising up Bayshore Drive right now, 630.
Yeah.
Yes. Eighth, yeah, see? That's what I'm saying. 949 says, the reach of WGN is amazing. I always listen from Southern California online. Well, yeah, you can do online anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the reach of the actual AM tower. Never have I ever dived off a diving board. Oh.
Now, what about jump? You know, diving is different.
Right.
Because I could jump off a diving board, but yeah, would you want to like really leap and dive? It's dangerous.
Right. There's a lot of Door County. Never have I ever Door Counties. 262, never have ever made it to Washington Island in Door County. I've been on the ferry to go there one January day, only to find it didn't make a return trip till the next day. So they had to turn the ferry around and made us jump off. Seven 773 says, never have I ever smelled my own feet. That's just weird.
Do people do that?
Yeah. What is that? What are you like? I'm trying to figure out. It's another one that you have to interpret. So does that mean that you don't have smelly feet? That's okay. Or is it the action of pulling your feet up to your nose and trying to smell it? Like, I'd never done that.
There was a kid like I went to grammar school with that he would bite his toenails. I remember that being a thing.
His feet toenails?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Or there's hand toenails.
Like, you know, Indian style. Can you say that? Is that a thing that you can say anymore?
You can't say it anymore. Yeah. You have to say Native American style.
Yeah.
There you go.
Bring a leg up.
224. Never have I ever mowed a lawn. What? Also, King of Queens is a good show.
I wasn't saying it was a bad show. I like King of Queens. You know, the Doug Heffernan, he's good. But when you want a Seinfeld, you want a Seinfeld. Kevin James isn't going
to
do it.
Which one do you like better? I mean, right now, we're not done yet. We still have a couple minutes. But never have I ever mowed a lawn, or never have I ever played Monopoly. Those are tough, man. This is as tough as Master of None or Atlanta.
I'm going to say Monopoly, only because if, like, maybe you grew up in the city in an apartment or something, right. So you never had...
Anyone has access to Monopoly, right?
Yeah. It seemed like as a kid growing up, as a rite of passage, you know, board games.
Imagine that feeling of mowing a lawn for the first time. Like, if they're, like, in their 40s or 50s, and they're like, this is what it's like? They missed that, like, I remember we had a yard, and so from when I was 12 years old... I had to mow the lawn, and it was terrible, and I did a terrible job.
Right, that's what my father would say. Never have I mowed a lawn successfully. The lines weren't straight. Right. You have to redo it.
At a certain point, I just, you know, you'd somehow in my system, I would miss like a whole swath of the yard. He's like, you didn't even hit that part. I'm like, oh, man, I didn't go around. Oh. All right, 312-981-7200. Keep them coming, but those are the front runners right now. It's Monopoly or Mow a Lawn. Playing Never Have I Ever tonight, 312-981-7200. Here on the download, Justin Kaufman. 847 says, never have I ever seen a Star Wars movie. That seems to be a very consistent never have I ever. And I guess it's the same concept as never have I ever seen Friends or never have I ever seen Seinfeld. You get to a certain point where you're like, everybody, like, you realize that not everybody watches the same television or watches the same movies, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I was thinking in my head, I'm like, never have I ever seen an episode of Dallas. Just not a thing, man. Just missed it.
The reboot?
The old one. You know, I was too young for it, and it really wasn't a thing. And then when it got nostalgic, I didn't care who shot JR. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I get, I mean, even the best shows get, what, a 10 share? You know, which is 10% of the market. So it's like, there's a lot of people that miss even some of the most iconic shows of our time.
Yeah, I mean, like your dad, I'm sure, is like, oh, you never seen Gunsmoke?
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, no.
No. Right, if you're not part of the demo, yeah, that's going for, yeah, right. Never have I ever, this is 402, never have I ever smoked a puff of anything. Neither has my husband. That's good. A lot of bad things that can happen to your lungs. So you're in the clear. 847 says, never have I seen Game of Thrones. See, it's the same concept where you're like, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think I mentioned this last week that I feel like I have seen it because I remember we tried to start it and I watched the first three episodes and then was like, I just don't have the time for it. And so whenever I catch up, like there'll be Game of Thrones will be on and I'll be like, oh, and I'll start watching it. I'm like, I wonder if I can figure this show out from the first three episodes of memory. And I can't. Like, I'm like, oh, that guy, that guy. From The Wire. He's still on it. 312 says, 47 years old. Never have I ever rode a horse, milked a cow, or chewed tobacco. 224 says, never have I gone skiing or snowboarding. I haven't gone snowboarding. I feel like I missed that. 847, never have I failed a class in grade school, high school, or college. Oh. I don't think I failed a class. I feel like I failed like a quarter. There are a couple of algebra classes where it was more of we need an attitude adjustment, not adjustment.
I may have been headed that way in college, and then I like, you know, I'll drop this one before.
Yeah, that's also the way out. Yeah, I'm just going to get rid of this class. Not for me. The worst grade I ever had in college was a math. I went to Columbia College Art School. But you had to take math for the prereq, and there was a math class for artists that was a joke, and everybody in there the joke kept being like, math is not my thing. That was including the teacher. And then I got the grade back, and I think in the second or fourth week or whatever, and it was like, you are at your progress right now, you have a D. And I'm like, how am I getting a D in remedial art algebra? Like, and I turned it around. I'm like, stop joking. Because I was just, like, doing bits. There might have been a girl in the class I was into. I was just like, oh, who cares? Who needs this? I'll do some jokes during the test. And then I get a D. I'm like, all right, I'm paying for this. I need to pay attention to this. Never have I hitchhiked, 708. I don't think I've ever hitchhiked. That's a generational thing. I don't feel like I've ever stuck my thumb out. I mean, there's definitely been times that I've grabbed rides.
I don't think on the highway. I wasn't on 57.
Right.
But I think in my neighbor, like my suburban neighborhood, I think I've tried. Like when I was a kid.
I remember one time, just a couple years ago, I was accidentally on Michigan Avenue when Lollapalooza got out, and this guy, the Australian couple, comes up to my car and goes, "Are you by chance heading north?" And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, are you going to go by the Westin? And I'm like, I think so. Yeah, hop in. So we got up there. And what I really found funny is that I drove him, got him out of the crowd, before the crowd kind of took over Michigan Avenue, got him to where they were going to get the Westin. And they're like, we really want to give you money. And I'm like, don't worry about it. And they're like, oh, no, here. And they hand me it was $2.50. Like the guy actually had coins. Like that's what he was going to get in a cab with. And that's what he gave me, was $2.50. So I kind of got mad at that, where I was like, if you're going to give me money, you got to overpay for that.
Yeah, at least a 10.
What, you're getting in a stranger's CRV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead, move the kid seat.
You picked him up, huh?
Yeah, it's just kind of like, it was kind of fun.
Dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, those kids, you never know. All right, 312-981-7200. All right, we got to cut it, because Patty's coming up here. So we're going to give away a Lou Malnati's pizza. And I'll go with you, Pete. I'll go with you. Never have I ever played Monopoly. It's going to get the winner tonight. I agree. I think that Mow a Lawn is also intriguing. But the idea that you've never played Monopoly, not once. I haven't even tried it.
More of a Sorry fan or just no board games?
Maybe just not a board game person. Maybe they're a really young listener. Like maybe they're 11. And they're like, I don't have Monopoly on my iPad. It's possible that could be it. All right, so we'll give the Lou Malnati's Pizza, the gift certificate, to the winner of Never Have I Ever tonight. Never Have I Ever Played Monopoly. I love this segment. We're going to do it again next week. That's going to do it tonight for the download. Patty Vasquez coming up next here on 720. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Tomorrow night, we reload this week's news. There's been a lot of news. Charlie Meyerson, Rumana Hussein, be my panel. I'm excited. Find out which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now. I think I have an idea. Withdrawing from the Paris Accord. It's perfect 500 years from now. We're all underwater. Remember?
One thing's for sure, though. Al Gore will still be making money off climate change.
Al Gore, his head will be in a cryo thing. Like, I told you.
Uh-huh.
I told you. The glaciers.
Inconvenient Truth 16 is out in theaters.